Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's Monday night conference call. Today is March 20th, 2017. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. And if you're listening over another network or you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250. Our participant code is 449389. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions into questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. Again, that's questions, plural, @nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support National Liberty Alliance effort to save America. Also, please support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. And we do need some support here, so anybody who can afford $5 a month or more, and I'm sure most of us can, go up there and click on the donation button and send us the $5 a month. Okay, scripture reading for tonight is going to be Matthew chapter 5, verses 1 through 20. It's a Sermon on the Mount. Again, Matthew chapter 5, verses 1 through 20. And seeing the multitudes, he went up onto the mountain. And when he was set, his disciples came unto him. And he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you, and say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for so persecuted they the prophets which were before you. Ye are the salt of the earth. But if the salt lose its savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is thenceforth good for nothing, but to be cast out and to be trodden under the foot of men. Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men, that they may see your good works, and glorify your Father, which is in heaven. Think not that I am come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill. For truly I say unto you, till heaven and earth pass just one jot or one tittle, shall in no wise pass from the law till all be fulfilled. Whosoever therefore shall break one of these least commandments, and shall teach men so, he shall be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. But whosoever shall do and teach them, the same shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I say unto you, that except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, ye shall in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven. That was Matthew chapter 5, verses 1 through 20. That was the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount and the Beatitudes. We'll pick that up next week on verses 21 and on. Okay, a couple of announcements of what we're doing, where we're going, and then we're going to look at a paper that we put together that we're sending to the President of the United States. let's see, we're going to be starting a foreclosure and tax for tax and mortgages. Anybody who's got a tax or a mortgage, non-judicial foreclosure going on, we put together a paper, and we're going to try to help these people by doing a show cause and forcing these people to give an answer by what authority they act without due process. course, they can't answer these questions, so we should hope we'd be able to get a default and get these people's houses back if they lost them, and or some kind of restitution, and or save their houses from being foreclosed upon. So we're going to focus in on that. We're also, of course, be working on the habeas corpuses, which we're still in process of working on. I think on the foreclosures, we're ready to go. I haven't been able to get the paperwork and the forms up there yet, but I will get them up before the end of the day tomorrow. It will be located if you wanted to check from time to time to see if the form is there. And as soon as you see the page there and the form is there, you can let me make sure we haven't used this page yet. I don't think we did. But it's going to be nationallibertyalliance.org/foreclosure. Let's see. Yeah, I don't think we used it, but just checking. Okay, yeah, I get a 404, which means the page isn't used yet. So that's where it's going to be, nationallibertyalliance.org/foreclosure. And so that'll be for tax foreclosures and mortgage foreclosures. There'll be a form up there. There'll be instructions, and an affidavit will be required. We will be asking for a $100 donation to offset the cost. Whatever money isn't spent there will be spent to help those who can't afford anything. And then, of course, the rest of the proceeds will go to National Liberty Alliance to support our overhaul work. The donation is going to National Liberty Alliance. National Liberty Alliance is facilitating all of the necessary costs to the grand jury for filing these papers. The papers will be filed by the grand jury, not by National Liberty Alliance. There is a separation there, although, of course, we all are working as members to become educated, to become and work with the grand juries. We're organizing across the nation. We've been organized for quite some time, but now we're kind of buttoning up, trying to get everybody up and going and moving again, and starting to get very, very active. Of course, we're still continuing on building the committees of safeties, which is on the grassroots level in every county. It's moving a lot slower than we thought, but it's moving along. And we need people to really get involved on the local level and get a committee of safety going. And they will be the support behind the grand jury administrators. The key thing that we're structuring ultimately, of course, is getting the grand jury administrators going. And that's really what we're trying to do. We have national coordinators. We have district leaders. We have state coordinators. We have county organizers. And then we have the true grassroots, which would be the administrators and the people organizing in the county. People organizing in the county should really be getting together, working on the committees of safety. The administrators should also get involved with the committees of safety. But our real big focus and goal is on the building administrators in every county. If we can get one going and then two and then three and then four, that's the key. At some point in time, these people in the counties might decide that they need an extra person or two, depending on the size of the population, which they shouldn't in most cases, except for, like, in the cities. You know, you take, like, the five boroughs down in New York City, you're definitely going to need more than four administrators. You might need eight. I don't know. They'd have to figure that out themselves. But generally speaking, four administrators would be required generally in most counties across the nation. And even the counties that are very, very minimum, as long as they've got a court in that county, then as far as, a court for the state, like the Supreme Court here in New York, every county has a Supreme Court. I don't know what they might call it in your state, but whatever it is, every court would need jury administrators, because they'd need the jury process there for grand juries and trial juries. On the federal level, for a lot of people that may not realize it, collectively, all of the counties within a federal level, within a federal area, would work together to pull in the necessary people to sit on a federal jury, and that's how we'll set it up. So if a particular situation were to take place in a particular county, and the federal, it's a federal case, well, then that would fall, the burden would fall on the county administrators in that county to pull together the necessary people in order to hear a case, maybe before the grand jury, or maybe pull the people together for a trial jury for that federal case. So there's no need to get a federal level jury administrators and the state. You know, they're all in one, inside one. So, okay. So, again, the Committees of Safety and Grand Jury Administrations is a focus, working in on the grassroots, and we're organizing all the way down the level, state coordinators, all the way down into county organizers, and then these administrators and different individuals. Now, we put together an information sending to President Trump. The timing, I think, for this paper is perfect. Our next paper that we're going to be looking to work on, and hopefully we'll get it done in a week or two. I'd like to say a week because it's happening as we speak, the next paper as far as spying on the people. We've talked about this before. We've written papers before. So it should be pretty quick for us to be able to put a paper together and really focus in on the court and go after maybe the NSA particularly. We'll have to figure out our targets. I haven't thought about who our targets would be on this, but the NSA clearly would be one, Homeland Security. And again, I'm not too sure who else. But people are listening into our phone calls. They're reading our emails. They're listening in our conversations on Skype. They're even tracking and listening and reading our keystrokes in some areas. If you have a new TV set, some of these manufacturers have cameras in them, and they're spying in our living rooms and our bedrooms. It just doesn't end. And so with the complaint that the president has made concerning the spying on him when he was running for president, and we know he was being spied on, there's no doubt about that. After all, he was one of the people, and he wasn't the president yet. And so, indeed, he was being spied on, and even more so because he was running against, Hillary Clinton. So, because that's in the news right now, and we can write this paper pretty quickly, that's the next focus. But right now, what we did write a paper on is concerning, what's going on today right now, with the president and the problems with these two judges, one down in Florida and one out in Washington. And these two judges are way, way out of line. The president doesn't understand the power and the authority he has of nullification, the fact that there is separation of powers, and that he has the power and the authority to thumb his nose at them and just move on. And so we wrote a paper. It's only four pages. It's pretty short. You can get a copy of this paper up on nationallibertyalliance.org. Highlight grand jury. Click on docket. Let me repeat that. nationallibertyalliance.org. Highlight grand jury. Click on docket. Or you can just put in nationallibertyalliance.org/docket. And you will come to where our papers are. Everybody should know where that's at anyway, and the evidence and different papers we've been filing. This is paper number 1008-02. Let me refresh my page because I don't see it on mine. Okay, I think it just showed up. 1008-02. And it's called The Information to the President. Okay? And so we're going to read this paper. It's a pretty short paper. It's only four pages, and it's got a lot of footnotes, so it's not full pages. And the last page is practically nothing on it. Okay. Information to President Donald Trump, recorded case number 116CV1490, Crime to Intercept. The purpose of this information is to advise the president as to the law concerning the abuse of powers. Thomas Jefferson said in his reply to address the Constitution on which our union rests shall be administered by me as president concerning according to the safe and honest meaning contemplated by plain understanding of the people of the United States at the time of its adoption. A meaning to be found in the explanations of those who have advocated, not those who opposed it, and who opposed it merely lest the construction should be applied, which they denounced as possible. Common sense is the foundation of all authorities of the law themselves and their construction. Excuse me. Federal district courts do not have the jurisdiction to impeach the judgment of the President of the United States. We, the people, through Article 3, Section 2, Clause 5, established and ordained that sole jurisdiction to the House of Representatives alone. Any judge assuming such powers puts our nation in jeopardy, would be acting under the color of law and ultra vires, rendering his decision invalid. Therefore, they can be ignored. The judge would be in bad behavior and subject to impeachment by the House or removed by indictment. You know, the House of Representatives, the Congress, you know, I don't even think they realize they can remove judges because any judge in bad behavior, Congress has the power and the authority to remove them. I don't think they got the backbone and the guts to do it anyway, but we can do it by indictment, and we will. Thomas Jefferson initiated the solution concerning the unauthorized assumption of power when he said, "When powers are assumed which have not been delegated, a nullification of the act is the rightful remedy. Aforesaid, the House has been delegated the power to impeach the judgment of the President, not the courts. Therefore, the President may ignore the court under the doctrine of separation of powers." Someone needs to mute themselves. "As a failsafe, the states alone being parties to the federal compact, are solely authorized to judge in the last resort of the powers exercised under it. Congress being not a party, but merely a creation of the compact and subject as to its assumptions of power to the final judgments of those by whom and for whose use itself and its powers were all created and modified. This right was vested by we the people through the 10th Amendment. The President, before entering office, took an oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution, and therefore has a duty to be obedient to his oath, not rogue judges. Adhering to strained constructions only serves to loosen all the bands of the Constitution. Therefore, if the President believes not acting would be detrimental to the security of our nation, he has a higher moral duty to obey the law by providing for the common defense of our borders that Congress vested with him under 8 U.S.C. Code 1182F. The opinion of a judge is not the law and has no power to nullify constitutional law, which is the supreme law of the land. If it were assumed that the general government has a right to exercise all powers, which may be for the general welfare, that would include all the legitimate powers of government, since no government has a legitimate right to do what it is not for the welfare of the governed. If the construction of the law, even in judiciary cases of meaning et term, where the opposite parties have a right and counter-right in the very words of the law, the judge considers the intention of the lawgiver as his true guide and gives to all the parts and expressions of the law that meaning which will affect instead of defeating its intentions. Any judge acting under the color of law for political reasons in an attempt to block the President from exercising his oath to protect we the people is guilty of obstruction and subject to prosecution. The President has a duty to nullify the said unlawful act and may proceed with impunity. The government will certainly decide for itself on whose counsel they will settle the construction of the laws they are to execute. We are to look at the intention of the legislature and to carry it into execution while the lawyers are nibbling at the words of the law. A nation can survive its fools and even the ambitious, but it cannot survive treason from within. An enemy at the gates is less formidable, for he is known and he carries his banner openly. But the traitor moves among those within the gate freely, his sly whispers rustling through all the alleys heard in the very hills, halls of government itself. For the traitor appears not traitor. He speaks in the accents familiar to his victims, and he wears their face and their garments, and he appeals to the baseness that lies deep in the hearts of all men. He rots the soul of a nation. He works secretly and unknown in the night to undermine the pillars of a city. He infects the body politics so that it can no longer resist. A murderer is less to be feared. Our advice to you, Mr. President, is nullify. And then we date it and sign it, grand jury foreman. And by the way, that was Sirio, is 42 B.C., we quoted. And before that, a nation cannot survive its fools and so on. Well, that was Sirio. Before that, we quoted most of the quotes in here with Jefferson. So anyway, that's the paper. Pretty short, 4 pages. Again, you can find it up on nationallibertyalliance.org/docket. Paper number 1008-202, information to the president. And again, I was supposed to get that to the post office today. I missed the post office. It'll be going out tomorrow morning, and he should get it in a couple of days. And we are sending that to his office down in New York City, and we're also sending it to the White House in Washington, D.C., to make sure that he gets it. Okay, let's see what else John. We have here. Yes.
I downloaded that, and it only has the first 3 pages, and then it repeats with the first 3 pages again.
Oh, let me see.
There's a problem.
Interesting. Let me see.
Man, it repeats and repeats and repeats.
Really?
It never gets on page 3.
Okay, I got page 1. Oh, goodness, 12 pages on this. I don't know how that happened.
Yeah, right.
Okay, I'll reset that up there. I don't know why. When Gerard picks up, I'll go back and I'll put that up there, okay?
Good, thanks.
Okay, so I'll delete that as soon as I can get off the mic. Okay, let's see. Do we have anything to report here, Jan? Any questions or anybody have a report or something they want to share with us?
We have probably a report from Robert on the Western Patriots, and we also have a whole bunch of questions tonight. Where would you like to go next?
Wherever you want to go.
Well, we got a good list of questions. Let's start on that.
Yeah, let's do the questions first. I agree.
Okay. In America, when did money changers begin issuing 10 times the amount of the notes which they were holding? And is this system of issuing 10 times the value of the notes being held known as fractional reserve banking?
The moment they opened up the national bank, they started it. And, of course, the National Reserve didn't start till later on. It came to the National Reserve Act. But almost immediately when the bank was opened, it was Jackson who killed the bank, and that stopped. And then, of course, the Federal Reserve came back in, what was that, 1913, I think it was, and then we had it back again. So its ugly face has been here from the beginning, and it goes all the way back before Christ. I mean, way, way back.
Right. Okay, second question. How did John and Gerard know for certain that President Trump himself has been reading NLA papers, as they have said, and according to John, in a recent national call-in, one indication of that is that the president has been using our language. Would John please give examples?
Well, yeah, I've been listening to President Trump from day one. I try to catch everything he says. I don't get it all, but I hear him using words and saying different things. If you listen to him speak today, he spoke about the elite, particularly. He spoke about himself and related himself to Jackson, and he used the word elite. And anybody who hasn't seen that should go out and listen in to what he had to say. You can find this stuff under the news. If you listen to the things we're saying and you listen to what he's saying, you'll find a word here and a word there that we use and he uses and no other politician uses. And he does speak about the law, the respect for the law, the Constitution, and so on. So you can find this news stuff up on our website. Go under news and click on either White House Briefing. You'll get information, of course, there. President's weekly address, very powerful. Trump in the news and lawless government. Not so much on Trump on the lawless government part, but you'll find some stuff, some congressional stuff. And there might be something in there on Trump, but particularly the first three. Trump in the news, President weekly address, and the White House briefing. Now, we made our first contact with Mr. Trump was made before he was president, and he was running for president. It was before he became president-elect, and then when he became president-elect, he was speaking to some people out there, out west, with the problem out there in Oregon, and they were connected to people out there who had some connection with us, and shared our papers, and so he had a group of people, which would be part of his, I don't know what you would call it, people working with him to bring him to become president, you know. They got our papers, and then when they met again, they wanted more. And so we've been sending papers ever since to President-elect Trump down in New York City at that address. And when he became, when he went to Washington, of course, we've been sending him there, and we're still sending down to New York City. Do we know that he personally reads it? I believe he does, because he's interested in the people. If you watch and look at the news, he's out there talking to the people. He wants to know what's going on. He wants to get feedback, and he's opened up different channels to do that. We have our channel open to him, and we're sending him in. And he's not responding directly back to us. Matter of fact, when we sent him in our first information that affected him directly, we told him that we don't expect for him to answer anything we're sending him. After all, he's president-elect. He hasn't done anything wrong. Just that we'll be watching and judging him by his first 100 days in office. And, of course, he's been doing a fantastic job. We will be making a direct contact with the attorney general that he has chosen. We'll be copying President Trump on that. We're expecting him to send a prosecutor down here to New York State. Of course, they already got prosecutors here. They're called U.S. attorneys. But we want to get a connection there to make sure that he sends word to this prosecutor here in New York State to work with us to start prosecuting these people who just refuse to obey the law. And so we're expecting that connection, and we're going to expect Mr. Trump to, you know, honor his words and do what he says. He wants to obey the law. We see that he is obeying the law. I think he's got a couple of errors. We're going to try to correct them soon, but they're not big errors, but they're errors. Well, one of them is a little big. But we'll correct him, and we'll give him the law where it is that he's gone astray and where he needs to be corrected. And that's what we got. So there are people that could be more specific. I don't know, Robert, maybe you can mention something about some of the people out west or whoever can make those notes on the connection there.
Well, the connection is his campaign people. Now, these people don't give out their names or anything. I know who they are, but they don't want people to know who they are. And so it's kind of I know who to go to, give them the information, and they make sure it gets directly to him.
Okay.
So I'm sorry, I just can't.
That's the answer. Well, that's good enough. And we're sending it directly to his business office, and we're sending it to the White House. And
right.
So that's where we're at.
Well, John, something else needs clarification here. This information is not just a letter. This is filed in the case under an information, the case that's going into the Supreme Court. So this is something that he definitely should read. It's on the record. I don't think that he's the type of guy that would have something come in on a case where he wouldn't read it or have one of the people that he trusts very much to read it and bring it to his attention. Now, you see, he did not have to listen to any of those judges. He gave them way too much leeway. Basically, those judges that tried to stop him were within treason. He could have indicted them. He could have had them kicked out of office immediately.
And
so,
he may still.
And he probably should do that. I mean, that one judge.
Well, remember, he's got to go to Congress to have that done. But I don't know if Congress has.
He can get him indicted. He doesn't need in Congress to indict them.
He can ask for an indictment. He can ask us. We give him an indictment.
He can tell the Attorney General to look into it. I mean, look at the grand jury has spoken. We just told him it's treason. That when a judge does that, he's outside of the law. And that's what his paper just said, did it not?
Mm-hmm.
The information, right? So
he
may not understand the power he has, and he may also not understand the separation of powers. And I mean, you didn't read the footnotes. The footnotes explain in more detail the power of the president, taken right out of the manual, the operating manual that says that the president can do this, this, and that, and he's held in immunity and he doesn't have to listen to the judges. So it's on no uncertain terms. And the fact that the grand jury, we the people, have sent him this in an information, hey, the people have spoken, so he should feel very empowered. So we just built him up with this. We just gave him more power. And maybe the next one will slap him where he makes a wrong decision on something. We'll say, okay, now you have the power to ignore the Supreme Court when the law says that you can. And now you can do this, but you can't do this. You can't do that.
Right.
The next time we're going to tell him, we're going to slap him and say, look, you don't have this power. And they don't have this power. And you need to bring this back under the Constitution, such as the asset forfeiture, which I don't believe he understands what that's all really about. And we'll give him a paper on that. We'll say, look, you can't go there. You can't do that. And that's what he needs. That he needs us speaking to him. That's how we're bringing the bottom up. He's bringing the top down. We're the bottom coming up. We're we the people coming up to the president. And that's what this is about. And this is official. This is on the docket. This is in the case. So this is more than just a letter to the president. This is on the record.
He needs a constitutional scholar on staff for
Absolutely.
This kind of thing.
Absolutely. And, you know, this paper, if you read, I like reading it online because when you hover over the footnote, it comes right up. You don't have to scroll to the bottom of the page. And you can read the footnote. It's a teaching document. It teaches you certain chapters and verses of the Constitution, of U.S. Code, very educational. And I mean, these are the type of things that they should have in the schools. I mean, the schools, lawyers need to come in and educate themselves reading these papers and reading the footnotes. I think they're very, very powerful. I think the footnotes are as powerful as the paper is. Anyway, that's
well, the footnotes, I think, actually makes the paper because it's the authority. We don't say anything or do anything without authority showing the authorities, and anybody who reads our paper knows that. If they're not reading the papers, maybe they don't know that. But now you do know that. Which, by the way, while Gerard was talking, I deleted the old one and I put the new one up. I don't know how that happened, but in any event, you got the proper one. I just looked. It's got four pages to it. So anybody wants a copy of that paper, nationallibertyalliance.org/docket. Refresh your page a couple of times. Make sure you get it clean. And then come down to 1008-02, information to president. And I just checked it, and it's four pages. It's working well now. So you got it.
By the way, a nation can survive its fools, even the ambitious, that whole thing. That's Cicero, by the way.
Cicero, yeah.
That's Cicero, yes. Just so people know.
Didn't I say that?
I don't know. You said something like zero or something. I don't know.
Did I say zero? Oh, okay. Well, what do I know?
It's just Cicero. So.
Cicero. Yeah, 42 B.C.
You have to look it up. Cicero is one of the works that our forefathers read. They, one of the, you know, great works that they educated and cut their teeth on. Cicero was one of them.
Okay.
All right, I rest.
What else do we have here, Jan? Anything else?
Okay. The next question for you tonight is, have any recipients or defendants responded to NLA papers besides a couple of judges a couple of years ago, i.e., have any other judges or any other type of government official who has received the papers responded? And if so, who are those officials? Or at the very least, what offices do they hold? And if so, have those responses been positive, negative, or neutral?
Yeah, well, look, nobody's responded until now. And they didn't respond because we didn't have a court case per se. What we had was we were using existing cases to file our papers into, as far as the habeas corpuses were concerned. The other papers we filed in all the federal district courts, but without federal district numbers. And they were really more information and also, you know, writs, mandamuses. We didn't expect them really to respond. I mean, but none of them did respond anyway, because that's not what they do. They're not going to respond unless they have to respond. But we did, now that we're in the court, now that we filed it in the court, yeah, the governor has responded. Now, he hasn't responded directly, and it was kind of strange the way he responded. Hang on, I'm going to go dark for a moment here because my headset's about to go out, so I'm just changing headsets, so give me a second. Okay, am I coming through now? I think I got my other headset on.
Yes.
Testing one, two. Yeah, and so the first paper we sent to the governor, they didn't even read it. And matter of fact, you can read everything up on the website, our response, any responses. We did get another response recently, which we haven't posted yet. I'll try to get that. But I just got it in the mail today. I want to read through it. I'll probably get it up tomorrow. And it'll be under the governor's response, which is, let's see. The first response was 1009-02, New York governor response by letter. And he said he was going to respond by paper, which the paper will put up there. We responded back to that letter, 1009-03. And our response was really quite simple. It was done concerning the information on the redress of grievances. And maybe I'll read that very quickly. It's very minimum, I think. It's only a few pages. Here's our response to him on that paper, okay? And now they have another one, which was an official response on the same thing, which they still didn't respond properly. And now we have another paper, and it went on a gun issue, which they haven't responded to yet, but we know we will. But we first have to beat them up a little bit on this. In the other paper, they had said something about they wanted to come, and they were saying we didn't have any standing. They would be able to show that and respond. Let me take a look at the letter. See,
first,
it was pretty short too. Let me read the letter.
Their first response. They didn't even have to respond. And they didn't
That was the point.
And they asked for 30 days when they had 60 days, so they didn't even know what the heck's going on.
They presumed what was in the paper, and they didn't know what was in the paper, which made the point that they're never going to respond to people. But we're going to force them to respond. Otherwise, we're going to get a default. But here it is. I represent Governor Andrew Cuomo in the above captioned matter. I write to request a 30-day extension to the answer deadline in this matter. By this request, the new answer deadline would be March 16th, 2017, which they had more time if they wanted to. But they were told they didn't have to respond, so they didn't even read the paper. It was just an information we had written. And it went on, I intend to make fully dispositive motion to dismiss on jurisdictional and various other grounds by this new deadline. So again, I mean, they didn't even read, and they figure they're going to make a good response and show that there's no jurisdictional, there was no jurisdictional, how do you put, dismiss on jurisdictional and various other grounds by new deadline. I anticipate that my motion will set forth grounds for dismissal that will apply equally to all other named defendants. And we had sent it all to 50 governors. Or was it 57, Gerard? I don't remember. Maybe it was 57.
Yeah, I think it was 56.
Yeah. The submission of my motion should therefore obviate the need for the filing and consideration of separate and duplicate motions by the multitude of other defendants. So he's going to represent all of the governors. You know, meanwhile, we're reporting to him subversion against the United States of America by enemies both foreign and domestic, and he's saying they don't have to respond. And again, we already told him we didn't have to respond. Just fix the problem.
Nobody gets to talk to the governor. No way, no how. Go away.
Yeah. And through the little square door, right? As such, in addition to seeking a 30-day extension by this letter, I also request that the court extend the deadline for all other defendants until after a ruling on my motion to dismiss. This extension of deadlines for all defendants serves the dual interests of judicial. And by the way, this letter is up there, and resource economy, and has been approved in similar matters commenced against large fields of government defendants. C. Hurley versus Attorney General, Pennsylvania, blah, 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 blah. In Healy, a matter commenced against all 50 state attorney generals, the Third Circuit Court of Appeals approved the lower court's grant of the same scheduling apparatus, holding in abeyance all answered deadlines until the defendant's motion to dismiss was decided. Of course, this request would in no way limit any party defendant's ability to answer to make a separate motion on their own behalf, should they be so inclined. Thank you for consideration of this request, blah, 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 blah. Okay, so that was how they responded, by a silly letter, and they always do that, and then they responded after that. Now, papers crossed in the mail, meanwhile, okay, and this was our response. In response to the attached letter concerning the above-captioned action from the New York State Attorney General's Office on behalf of Governor Andrew Cuomo, respondent dated February 16, 2017, to the court is herein answered on the record. The caption clearly states information and redress of grievances for two purposes. One, to be officially informed, as we the people are bound by both common law and statutory law to report subversion against the United States of America by enemies both foreign and domestic, as was earlier reported by the governor, unofficially via fax through the following papers. And then we mentioned all of the papers. There was 20 papers we had sent to him already concerning subversion. We talked about concerning martial law, mandamus concerning the Second Amendment. We talked about terrorism on another paper on subversion, and so on. It was 20 papers altogether. And it goes on. We then quoted 18 U.S.C. subsection 4, misprision of felony. Whoever having knowledge of the actual commission of a felony cognizable by a court of the United States conceals and does not as soon as possible make known the same to some judge or other person, civil or military authority under the United States shall be fined under the title or imprisoned not more than 3 years or both. So we reported the crime. And two, to remind and inform
that
all governors
are guilty, right, John?
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah, because we reported it. Did he report it to a judge? He did not.
And he didn't do nothing with it. No, he's supposed to respond.
He's
the responder now. I mean, how much bigger responder did he get than the governor, you know?
All right.
And then two.
Exactly.
And he tries to snake out of it. But listen, and two, to remind and inform that all governors are to respond by obedience to the law by honoring their oath and taking the appropriate action against the reported threat of subversion. In the aforesaid letter, the Attorney General's office by the following numbered requests and statements revealed their blind support for the governor before hearing the facts, placing both the governor and the attorney general on the wrong side of justice, which shows a total disregard and disrespect for we the people and shamefully exposes their lack of concern for honor, justice, and truth. Number one, a request to the court for a 30-day extension to answer for Governor Cuomo's and Cuomo and all the defendants to be moved to March 16, 2017. Two, Attorney General's intent to make fully dispositive motion to dismiss on jurisdictional and various other grounds. Three, anticipation that the motion will set forth grounds for dismissal that will apply equally to all other named defendants. Four, requested that the court extend the deadline for all other defendants until after a ruling on my motion to dismiss. And five, this extension of deadline for all defendants serves the dual interest of judicial and resource in economy. The information was dated and filed on December 15, 2016, served on January 16, 2017, and received by the respondent on or about the 18th, with the court's rules gracing government servants respondents 60 days to respond. Therefore, the rules set the date for default as March 19, 2017, which is more days. It is presumed that the New York State Attorney General would know the rules of the court. Nevertheless, the information was clear in that there was no written response required, only obedience to the law. I mean, what egg on the face do they have here on this? And it goes on. We went on. More importantly, this letter made crystal clear that the New York State Attorney General, without reading the information, responded with an arrogant, predetermined, and thereby biased position without any regard for justice or we the people, and was confidently going to make fully dispositive motion to dismiss on jurisdictional and various other grounds. Apparently, everything we the people challenge is irrelevant, frivolous, and without standing, whether it is or not. This is the disrespectful response of tyrants, and past experience in the New York State Supreme Court proves the same consistently with past respondents by this New York State Attorney General's office and the willing New York State judiciary who always maintains the status quo to protect their comrades. The Office of Public Interest of the Harvard Law School, in a guide written by the president and fellows of Harvard College in the revised 2014 edition, originally 1997 edition and 2008 revised edition, to all U.S. attorneys said, the Department of Justice mandate is to pursue justice every day and is expected to be insulated from partisan politics. The only obligation as a U.S. attorney is to try to do the right thing every day. And among the various types of criminal cases that they prosecute are political corruption, fraud, and civil rights offenses, as per the United States Attorney General, who is the head of the United States Department of Justice, per 28 U.S.C. subsection 503, is concerned with legal affairs and the chief law enforcement officer of the United States government. The Attorney General of New York, who was elected by we the people as Chief Legal Officer of the State of New York and the head of New York State Government's Department of Law, whose interest must also be that justice shall be done. In criminal cases brought against an individual or a group where the heading reads People versus Accused Criminal, New York prosecutors speaking in our good name all too often accuse the archives conviction of innocent people using stacked juries and willing judges. This is a crime that we intend on pursuing. On the other hand, in cases brought against state officials by concerned and injured citizens, the New York State Attorney General's office is sure to quash, claiming the case is moot, no jurisdiction, or no standing. And the results are always the same, whereas these servants never face justice for their lawlessness, while we the people are constantly injured. In this case, we the people did not accuse the governor of bad behavior, meaning the violation of his oath in the above-captioned information. However, let us herein serve notice, we do in the action to follow. We the people advise the New York State Attorney General to read we the people's future papers before responding, We also counsel the governor to honor his oath and answer we the people directly, as is his duty. In the following case concerning the United States Attorney General, it follows that the same applies to all state attorney generals. The United States Attorney General is the representative not of an ordinary party to a controversy, but of a sovereignty whose obligation to govern impartially is as compelling as its obligation to govern at all, and whose interest, therefore, in a criminal prosecution is not that it shall win a case, but that justice shall be done. As such, he is in particular and very definite sense the servant of the law, and twofold aim of which is that guilt shall not escape or innocence suffer. He may prosecute with earnestness and vigor. Indeed, he should do so. But while he may strike hard blows, he is not at liberty to strike foul ones. It is as much his duty to refrain from improper methods calculated to produce a wrongful conviction as it is to use every legitimate means to bring about a just one. And that's Berger versus the United States. In closing, we the people reiterate, justice shall be done. And while the Attorney General is not at liberty to strike foul blows upon the people, it is the Attorney General's sworn duty to refrain from improper methods calculated to produce a wrongful conviction or protect lawless government servants. And that was sent and dated March 1st. Now, they sent another paper, and they still answered the paper when they still didn't have to. And I haven't read through that yet, and we will read through that, and we will comment and respond to that. But now we have another paper that passed in the mail. While he was sending that one out, we had a paper going in, which is bringing a case where he does have to answer concerning the gun laws. And we had read that, I think, 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. I forget when that was. But anyway, that's where that's at. So that's the only response we've gotten so far. But there are other deadlines we're waiting for. I think I saw something in here from Congress. But again, that came today, so I don't know what that is, I'll get to that this week. What else, Jan? Anything else?
Oh, yes. This one is a memory check or test with four parts, so I'll read the whole thing to give you some time to gather your thoughts. In the March 7th weekly call, about 40 minutes in, John expressed the view that Rhode public office holders ought to be tried and jailed. He stated that since we already have them built, the jails may as well be used for the purpose intended. Didn't Mr. Winders tell us months ago how common law societies weren't big on jailing people and that we used to only send people to federal penitentiaries like Fort Leavenworth for federal offenses? Are not treason and subversion capital offenses? And is there a reason we, the American people, would jail outlaws for their outlawry rather than execute them? End of question.
Okay, yeah, well, look, that's my personal opinion, but I'm not the decider of those things. That belongs to the jury. And I think these people, they've sent so many people to jail, I think they deserve some time in jail to see what it's like, what they've done to these people. They've taken people, put them in jail, they pinned them to floors, they couldn't even reach the toilet bowl. We hear those stories, okay? And they leave them in coal cells, they have no pillars, they put them on rock-hard surfaces in coal cells. There's times when they don't even get to eat. They don't bring them food. They diesel them around. I mean, this is horrific. Now, I don't think we should do that to them. Maybe my personal opinion, I think we should do it for a day or two, let them see what it feels like. But, you know, that's wrong to do that to people, even to them, okay? But nevertheless, I think, you know, look, for sending a paper back, let's take a judge. If a judge orders a clerk to remove a paper from the files, the law says 20 years in jail, and that's a law for him, okay? Not a law for you and me, because we're not involved in that. We're not public servants. They can't make laws to control us, okay? We're under common law. Now, they're under common law, too, but when they're working in their servant, working as a servant, Okay, there are codes, U.S. code, that Congress has written up for the sole purpose of what punishment should be applied. Now, a jury doesn't have to adhere to that. They can ignore it and make their own punishment. They can give them the death penalty. They can give them a year in jail. They can give them a month in jail. They can, do some other form of restitution. But whatever it is that they want to do, they can do. I don't think that we would want to put anyone in jail for 20 years for removing papers. It's a horrible thing, but clearly they are subversive. Clearly they have committed a huge crime. Clearly, even in their record, they have damaged so many people. You could take all their assets away from them. They still haven't got enough to pay restitution. But I think everything, all their assets should be taken away, and I think they should be put into a pot somewhere where they could be given out to people for restitution, taken away from all these other judges, too. Not that you would get much. Clearly, these people should work the rest of their life, giving most of their money back to the people that they've injured. Clearly, this should be the case. And clearly, they should probably suffer some time in prison so that they understand the pain that they put upon others. But again, that's my personal opinion. That's not what needs to – I'm not telling anyone that this is what they need to do, and it would be a crime for me to tell a jury that, by the way. As an administrator, if I was one of the administrators and we were orientating a jury and we were to tell them something like that, that would be jury tampering. That would be a crime. I would be committing a crime at that case at that point in time. But making my opinion what I think should be is an opinion and not a crime. But we have to teach the juries that they have to have a sense of honor, justice, and mercy has to be considered at the end. Restitution has to be the focus. Jail is not necessarily the focus. Jail is for violent people, to restrain them for a period of time. If you can restore these people, clearly we don't have systems set up to restore these people. You take an animal and you lock them up in a dark dungeon and you throw a piece of meat in them once in a while and you come in and beat them and treat them like a piece of crap. Well, when you let them out, what do you think they're going to do? They're going to be a wild animal, aren't they? You know, that's not how we should be dealing with people if we do have to imprison somebody. subversion and... against the United States of America, I'm not sure whether the death penalty is necessarily proper or not. I think for some individuals, I think it is. I think most of the individuals are acting ignorantly. Of course, they're being paid off. They're really working. They're really doing what they're doing for money's sake. That's what they're doing it for, because they're making money out of it. Or they're getting a position of power, which makes money again. And that's a crime, of course. But sometimes I don't think that they know what they're doing. I don't think they understand how serious a problem and the effects. But one day they will understand that. And that's when justice comes, and that's when they'll understand. And they'll look back, just like the Nazis did. Some of these Nazis, they thought this, that, or the other thing, and some of them didn't realize what was really going on in some of these concentration camps and so on. But they found out once they got before the courts, you know. Anyway, what's next?
Well, that's the last of the questions. I guess Robert's Western Patriot Report should be next on the schedule.
Okay. All right.
Well, there's not a lot. However... tomorrow at 3:30 p.m. our time out here in the West will be the decision from Judge Anna Brown on the misdemeanor charges. And also, they're making a decision. They're thinking about on one of the people that were found guilty on one of the other charges, they're thinking about making him wear a collar, you know, to keep track of where he's at. Probably an ankle bracelet, but I guess he travels a lot, and they want to make sure they know where he's at. So that'll be another decision that comes tomorrow. There are some things going on in Nevada where somebody got into the cell with some of our patriots, with drugs and was offering drugs to all of them. I think it was a setup. None of them took any of it, but it was enough to make them strip down for a strip search by the women guards again. And the Bundys, they refused to strip down, refused to have a strip search, and so they and some of the others were placed back in isolation. So, you know, it's just the harassment continues.
Maybe we should rethink the penalties.
Rethink the penalty?
John just talked about how we shouldn't penalize people too
justice
severely.
And
but
mercy.
I don't know.
Some people do more damage with a pen than they do with a gun or a knife, and I think they should pay
That's
for
right.
that. They ruin people's lives. People die due to their pen, and they need to answer for that. And actually, some of those cases, the death penalty is absolutely warranted, especially when they understand what's going on and they do it anyway. You know, with malice and forethought.
Agreed. And again, you know, the bottom line is a jury has to make that final decision. The 12 people
right.
who sit in that room and see and get all the facts and figure it out, then they need to make that decision. And if it's the death penalty, I have no problem with it.
And hey, did you know that Trump had all the federal prosecutors resigned, and he fired Parit Bahar, who refused to resign?
Well, you know, Parit wasn't too bright because some of these judges and some of these prosecutors that he fired, he rehired them again, you know. Parit probably would have been rehired. He was doing a pretty good job.
Parit was told he'd be staying on, but then Trump fired him.
Well, he fired them all, but then he rehired a percentage of them. He fired every single one of them and then rehired a percentage of them. Yeah, I think he would have pulled Parit back in. But Parit took the wrong road. He wasn't too bright. He wasn't paying attention.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, he did
so
tell Parit that he would hire him.
He stuck his foot in his own mouth. He fired himself, ultimately, is what he did.
I think
he showed his arrogancy.
That's right. I think it was an exercise. In other words, he told Parit that he would hire him. And then after he told them that, he told them all to resign. And some
right.
of them did. Some of them refused. So that
so
was
only
an exercise
one refused. Only one. Only
that
one
was Parit
refused.
That refused.
That was Parit.
Right.
Only one.
So he fired him. And that was a lesson. That was a lesson that, guess what? If you don't behave, then I'll fire you.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was just a message.
Anyway. You know, I don't know that we could really have trusted Parit. There was something wrong about that guy, and I couldn't put my finger on it, but I really don't know one way or the other. But look, there were certain things he refused to do. He refused to do things down in New York City with all of what was going on down there, remember? He refused to work with the cops. You know, what was that all about? Why? Why was he refusing that, you know? So, anyway. What else? We got anything else there,
Jim? That's all I have for tonight.
Okay. Jan, anything else?
Nope, that's all I had.
Okay, let us move over to Brent. Brent, are you here?
Yeah, he's on.
Okay, Star Six. Oh, okay. You've been unmuted, Brent. Okay.
Yeah,
we got Brent Winter, the author of The Excellence in the Common Law, and... His website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, I don't know what you're going to talk about tonight, but you got the mic. Take the mic, Gerard, I'm going to move over into, let me do this for us while Brent is talking. People can collect themselves into the Q&A. So we're going to open up Q&A, and you're going to take control of the board.
All right.
Let me see if I can get it open. It doesn't want to open. Let me try it again. Not going for me. Jan, you want to try to put it into Q&A? Thank you. Okay. Okay, go right ahead, Brent. You got the mic.
Thank you, John. Just a word about jail. That word incarceration sounds too sanctimonious for me. I like just the word jail because that's what it is, and anybody that's ever been there knows what that means. And to remove the jail somebody is to take away their liberty at a fundamental level. Your liberty to locomotion, to go where you want to go. And to do that is to destroy life. And to destroy life is to destroy property. Life, liberty, and property, they can be distinguished for purposes of consideration. But the three are inextricably bound, like the beginning, the middle, the end, like the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Life, liberty, and property rise and fall together. They're bound together. Body, soul, and spirit, there's three more, bound together. We can distinguish body from soul, from spirit, and do so accurately. But when they're separated, they all three fall. You take the soul from the body, the breath of life from the body, and it falls down flat. The same thing, of course, is true of life, liberty, and property. That's why they're listed together in our Declaration of 76. If someone removes a document from a file, whether it be a court clerk, an employee of the courthouse, whether it be by order of the judge, whether it be by influence of the prosecutor, whether it be by anyone in the courthouse or out, someone sneaks into the courthouse that is not receiving a paycheck from the government. Anyone who does that should, by rights, according to the law of God is perfect. That means it's perfected. That means it is impossible to make it any more of what it claims to be, any better, any more consistent. It is ultimately perfected. And the perfected, that law from the true lawgiver says if somebody does something like that, tries to thwart a case, tries to throw it, tries to change it, tries to alter it against the facts, then the person that does that must suffer the same penalty that the person would have got or did get because of what they did. Just as if someone lies on the witness stand and somebody goes to the electric chair. Well, the one who bore false witness must go to the electric chair. This is ugly stuff, and it occurs consistently, especially in the federal courts. And even sometimes I've seen judges say, well, that's not the government doing that. You're criticizing the court. And of course, the response is, well, it doesn't make any difference who did it. If you want to be that persnickety about it, it was done. And it's thwarting justice, and it's not to be overlooked. Shuffling files, I've seen that. Confusing files, getting them out of order on purpose, making documents appear and disappear, be inadvertently placed all on purpose. Whoever does that, whether it be the prosecutor, whoever does it, and whoever has a hand in it, must suffer the same penalty that was possible for the person that was going to suffer the penalty because that happened. That's what God says. Forget what man says. Forget all of our opinions. You know, if I had my way about it, I'd probably be too rough. And in other instances, I'd be too lenient, as we all are. That's why God says that the punishment must equal the crime. Not more than it ought to merit for the crime, not less, but exactly the punishment must equal the crime. The eye must be given for the eye, the tooth for the tooth, and the life for the life. And it won't stop any other way. And someone says, well, I have evidence that won't make it stop either. Well, I don't think you do. But it wouldn't make any difference whether it is effective as we understand it or not. That's what God said. And I, just looking at that standard, that the person who tampers with evidence, tampers with the file, delivers false witness. By the way, delivering false witness is tampering with evidence. That's what testimony is. Anyone who does that deserves the punishment that the person would have gotten had that evidence, that false evidence, that thwarting of evidence, had it saw its effect. Well, that's the way I think that ought to go. We were talking about the Declaration, of 76. The Declaration of 76, it is not a Declaration of Independence, as it is popularly called. Those words like that don't appear anywhere on the document. You can't find evidence that that's what it is within the four corners of that document. It is clearly a shifting of dependence. It is a declaration of a shifting of dependence from the crown upon the crown of England, Britain, I should say by that time, to dependence upon the judge of all the world. I'm quoting the Declaration of 76, the supreme judge of all the world. God himself, the maker of all things, the creator, it says. This is no document thrown together. Magna Carta has clear signs of being thrown together in the heat of confusion. It is solid substance, but it's haphazardly thrown together. In the heat of impending invasion from France, at the behest of the Pope of Rome, and war with the landholders of England. And Stephen Langton threw it together fast. Well, our Declaration of 76 is in the same vein, but it is well organized, and it is the product of several things, beginning with the Reformation, in the country of Scotland, the Scottish Enlightenment that grew out of it, the phrase of our declaration, the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God, is from the Scottish Enlightenment. We can't pin it on any one fellow, but we can see that it comes from a lot of men out of the Scottish Enlightenment. The Scottish Enlightenment took over the whole island of Britain. By the way, the Scots gave us the whole idea of a high school. That came out of the Scottish Enlightenment High School. And the whole idea that doctors would sit down and talk to their patients, that came out of the Scottish Enlightenment. Before that time, doctors used a go-between to talk to the patients. They brought them the information, and then they decided what would be done. Odd as that may sound, the Scottish Enlightenment, we are the product of that Enlightenment that took over the English-speaking world. And the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God arose out of that Enlightenment, which arose out of the Reformation under John Knox. In Scotland, the laws of nature, William Blackstone tells us, is that first volume of God's revelation of his will to man. It is the law of God, the will of God revealed, and the nature of things revealed in his created order. That's the first volume of his revelation of his will to man, his law. And the second volume of his revelation of his will to man, the laws of nature's God. William Blackstone calls this revealed religion. Religion, that means our response back, our binding back to our God in response to what he has done. He has created us. We respond back. Re legere, that's religion. Obedience. Obedience to his will, his law, the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God. And our Declaration of Independence is a product of that. John Locke was taken by the Scottish Enlightenment. He was a fan of the Scottish Enlightenment. He saw that they had it wired right, and he followed it closely. He was part of it, as a matter of fact, even though he was from further south in England. And the phrases taken Tom Jefferson took to put in our Declaration. Many of them are from John Locke's second treatise on government. Well, it is a document that we don't want to overlook. Our Declaration of 76 lists a train, T-R-A-I-N, very important word. We'll see why in a minute. I hope we'll get to it. A train of overt acts, abuses, and usurpations. Those two words require defining. Abuses and usurpations, proving that King George's conspiracy with England's central bank money cartel and offshoot trading monopolies. It's all about that. And those were being used to replace common law courts and government with the law of the cities, international admiralty, and martial law. Rule by distant decree, searches without warrant, tribunals without due process, and criminal convictions without the jury. Well, if you have a criminal conviction without the jury, that's a violation of what? Due process. It all comes back to due process because that's what our law of the land is. There's a movement afoot, among patriots, folk that I otherwise like, I suppose, but they're getting real ugly about it. And they're saying things like this. They're saying that the Constitution is an antichrist document. I have a book, hardbound cover book, done with a lot of research, and the theme of the book is that our Constitution is an antichrist document. Of course, he says that Patrick Henry never supported it. He smelt a rat, he said. He didn't want to go to the Constitutional Convention. And he said because, this fellow said, because our Constitution calls itself the supreme law of the land, it seeks to usurp the law of God. That's his theme. That's a gross misunderstanding of that phrase, supreme law of the land. Law of the land, lifted from Magna Carta, chapter 10, 39, 40. 39 and 40, I suppose, say it also in a roundabout way. Law of the land is the old phrase, Latin word Magna Carta lex terra. It's the old phrase for due process. Our Constitution is the supreme due process. And what that means is that as to the things of which it speaks, this is the way government is to operate. As to the things of which it speaks, it is the supreme due process. That's what common law is, period. It is due process. It is not a list of laws, and that's the error of this fellow, in my humble opinion. Studied opinion, I might add. And I just repeat what I read in history and what the Supreme Court has said. Law of the land means due process. They've said that on many occasions. Well, today, in our own day, nowadays, as much as then, dependents of the powers that be displace common law government with civil law under many labels. And those many labels are include, I should say, admiralty law, martial law, administrative law, international law, which are no law at all, really, just names that other labels for the law of the city, the law of Babylon, as it has come to us through Pergamus and Rome, most in modern times, the Roman Code, which governs most all the world and every country, the Code of Justinian in its various forms. Well, the world has been turned upside down, some have said. Don Trump turned the world upside down. I'm not completely convinced he's done that. I am convinced that he has given the implication that has happened and people believe it, and that's power right there. If we believe, there's hope. I don't know yet. I'm waiting to watch. I haven't become so distrustful. I suppose that's healthy. I trust God. He's in control, but these fellows that say they're in control, I'm not so sure about them. But things are upside down right now. Politically, that has happened. This is nothing new. I suppose it's hard for us to appreciate the utter shock of the British at their defeat of the Americans. Not of them, from them, I should say. The Americans defeated the British, obviously. That's why we're here. That's why we're having this discussion. That's why we're talking about the Declaration of 76. But the British, when that happened at Yorktown, they were beside themselves. How do I know? Well, I read the accounts, particularly the account of one fellow who was there. He saw the whole thing. He participated in it. J.P. Martin. J.P. Martin from Connecticut. At that time, 23 years old. He signed up when he was 16. And he wrote of all of his experiences. Fascinating reading. Well, the British were beside him, themselves, he said. Their world had flipped upside down. General Cornwallis forced to surrender at Yorktown. He was confused and utterly embarrassed. He refused even to come out and show himself while his men stacked their arms, laid them down to the Americans. And the French were there, too, and that made it doubly embarrassing to him. So what he did was, he didn't come out and show his face, but he sent an order to the regimental band, the British regimental band, to play while his men laid down their arms. He ordered the band to play the then familiar pop tune named The World Turned Upside Down. Can you imagine the feeling of the British as the band played this familiar tune? And I can't help but think that as the band played this tune, while the British were laying their arms down, that nobody was singing, of course, but I can't help but think that the lyrics of this tune didn't dance about in their brains while they were listening to this tune played, just like when I hear certain songs played of which I'm familiar, I think of the words. Well, the words went like this. If buttercups chased after the bee, if ships were on land and churches at sea, if mamas sold their babies to gypsies for half a crown, the whole world would be turned upside down. That was Cornwallis's opinion of what was happening. And I'm sure that the Americans were elated beyond belief. J.P. Martin says that, he puts it this way, he says, the arm of British power in America was dislocated by the capture of Lord Cornwallis and his myrmidons. Myrmidons. Myrmidons were the tribal name of the Thessalian Greek warriors who fought under King Achilles at Troy. They were Myrmidons, that was their tribal name, and they were men that would kill on command. They were almost robotic killers, trained killers. They would kill and be killed on command. Discipline beyond sensibility, beyond I suppose there have been a lot of men disciplined that way. I mean, when the Arab people, the Islamic people, tie bombs to their bodies and blow themselves up, it's that kind of a thing. Myrmidons. Useful idiots is a better way to say it. And that's what the Americans were saying when they called them that. And they were against it. Why were they against it? Because they were men. Americans were men at that time with intense common law sensibilities. That's why they fought the war. Because Britain demanded that the common law didn't apply in their American plantations. I'm quoting the first volume of Blackstone. The common law, he says, does not apply in our American plantations because that's the empire. That's part of the imperium. The common law doesn't apply there. And by the way, that's the secret of why slavery, why Britain allowed slavery in America. Slavery was allowed all over the British Empire until it was outlawed, but she did finally outlaw it, but it was allowed everywhere, but it was never by law allowed on the island of Britain. What occurred there, don't get me wrong, slaves were brought there and nobody bothered them. But there is nothing in the law that allows slavery on free soil, and they called themselves free soil because they believed, they had this right, the common law arises from the land. The problem with what they believed it only arose from that particular land, the land there on that island, their home island. They said it doesn't apply to the land over here in the New World or any place else. Well, it does. All the land of God is sacred to him. I meet people often that have a fixation on the land of Israel. The land of Israel is the land we call the land of Canaan. That place over there where Jesus Christ used to trod, is that special to God? Oh, yeah, it's very precious to God. But it's not any more precious than the land over here. And I'm saying that because the Bible says that. And this perversion about this land or that land is special is an evil doctrine that distracts us from our own responsibilities. God's land, all God's land, is special to him. When the Puritan, our first fathers, came here, that was their clear understanding, and they said so. Read their writings. I know nobody's got time to do that, but if people had time to do it, I can report it. That's what they believed. And the reason they believed that is because that's what the law of God says. It is not the matter of confining God's law to a particular land. All land that God has created is precious to him. Well, countless government-dominated corporations, untold agencies, and swarms of bureaucrats, codes of countless rules, executive orders, decrees, warrantless searches and seizures, administrative and foreign tribunals, all without due process, trial by jury, etc., now form, and I'm quoting the Declaration here, now form a long train of abuses and usurpations. A train, a long train, one right after the other. And the Declaration of 76 tells us that when a long train, one right after another, of abuses and usurpations, aimed invariably, that means trained and aimed at a single objective, that single objective being the slavery or the tyranny of a people, then at that point, says our Declaration of 76, our organic law by Declaration of Congress, the people at that point it's not an option, it's a duty, a responsibility to do something about it. Do something about it. And that's what the Declaration was. It was men doing something about it. And the first step that must be taken when you do something about it is that you set down your grievances in writing and you make your appeal, your petition. You petition government, you tell government, you ask government, you say, you're wrong. You have overstepped your authority. You have no authority. You're outside of the scope of your jurisdiction. Back off. And you do that through the channels that God has provided. That's what the Declaration of 76 is. They made their declaration to the entire world. You know what follows? The Declaration of 76 follows the law of God as Jesus Christ himself, in his own mouth, set it forth, the process that must be followed. They had, the colonies, had said to their cousins, to use a common term, those with whom they had consanguinity, common blood, they say in the Declaration of 76, they said, we have spoken to you, we've told you of our hardships here, we've told you what you're doing to us, we've asked you to please back off. And our repeated pleas were answered with repeated injuries. Those are the very words they used. In other words, like Jesus Christ said in Matthew 18, you have an offense against your brother, or your brother has an offense against you, as it says in the other gospel, either way, you settle it between you and them. You go to them quietly. You keep the trouble confined as much as possible. And if your brother will hear you and say, well, I understand, I get your point, then it's okay. Well, that's what we did. We went to the mother country, let's put it that way. That's what they used to call her, England. And we said, we want to keep this among us, among family. You're offending us. You're hurting us. You're damaging us. You have removed your common law. You're saying it doesn't apply to us here. The right to keep and bear arms, the right against unreasonable searches and seizures without a warrant, etc. Trial by jury, you've taken that. You're trying to keep that from happening. You're not allowing us to access land. All of these things that are against our common law. And they answered them with injury. Well, what's the next step, says Jesus Christ, according to Matthew 18? Well, then, if your brother won't hear you, you take it to the elders. And then if your brother still won't hear you, you take it to the entire congregation. Well, that pattern is followed. When the Declaration of 76 was made, they had already tried to go, as it were, in private, keep it all in the family. It didn't work. So the Declaration of 76 says, we are declaring these things now to a candid world. We're not hiding what we're doing, and we're not hiding what are our intentions. We're breaking it off. Well, that's what Matthew 18, Jesus Christ says there. At some point, you just break it off. Now, the Declaration of 76 doesn't say, we're coming after you. It just says, we're breaking it off. And we hold you, as we do all men, in peace, friends. If not in peace, as enemies. Now, there was really no declaration that they were going to come after anybody and visit them with violence. And there shouldn't be. If the first blows are struck, and in that case, that's what happened. The British sent the army, and it got worse. And the Americans had no choice. Well, they had a cruel choice, I'll put it that way. They could have been enslaved and abused, or they could have enforced their rights, defended their jurisdiction. We have today an application of the Bill of Rights when it says that it's against the law, and it's against our common law for the government to quarter soldiers in houses. But why is that against the law? Well, not because of the expense. It is an expense. It is a hassle. But ultimately what it amounted to was if you put soldiers in somebody's house and they stay there and they're sleeping in the front room or sleeping in a bedroom or eating at your table or in your refrigerator, they didn't have refrigerators, but in your pantry, in your root cellar, well, that's the eyes and the ears of the government in your home. They know everything about you. They know what you're planning. They know what you're thinking. They're weaseling information out of you, or they're just noticing unusual behavior, unusual glances, unusual words, and then they go back and report to their superiors. Isn't that what's happening today when we talk about all of the privacy violations that are occurring here in our own country? The eyes and the ears of government are upon us everywhere we look. Shouldn't we be applying the Bill of Rights in substance to try to change all that? John or Gerard, are you still there?
Yes.
Good.
Yeah,
time out, time out.
I was muted.
Time out while I just heard my telephone say that I'm about done in, so I'm going to hook up my telephone here just a minute.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, it won't take a second.
Oh, there we go. My son says, you speak good.
Well, it's my pleasure. I appreciate the encouragement. As long as I'm under hood, under hood, I'm speaking
he's
good.
19.
Understood.
That's coming from a 19-year-old, so if he can understand you, you must be speaking good.
Oh, good, good. That is encouraging. Yeah. I need to get to him. I need to get to everybody. If you can make a foggy place on a mirror by breathing on it, and you're the fellow I need to get to, you're still alive and you're still kicking and you still have an influence. Well, where I leave off, I'll make one other point, and this time, hopefully next time, well, I think we will, next time we'll get right into the text of our Declaration of 76. I'll end with this analogy. As the bow and the fiddle are necessary to fiddle music, so also our Declaration of 76 and our Constitution are needful to your freedoms. But even so, freedom is not in these documents any more than music is in the bow and the fiddle. Simply put, just as music is in the fiddler, so also freedom is in the man. Just as the fiddler is free to make his music only as far as he knows his bow and fiddle, likewise, you are free to live your freedoms only as far as you know your Declaration of 76 and Constitution. Now, to learn to play the fiddle, to take the bow and let the man come out through the instrument, takes time and discipline. And I have tried to learn enough fiddle to tell you this, that I appreciate a good fiddler. It's because I can't do it. I learned a couple of tunes and simple little tunes. It was fun to play. But my efforts taught me more than anything the appreciation of a fellow who can really play. But I know it doesn't come easy. But the man that can really play, the Vassar Clements of the world, men like that. And by the way, Jack Benny was a pretty good fiddler, too. I heard him play, a very good concert fiddlist, called himself a violinist, I suppose. But it just doesn't happen. It takes discipline. That means like brushing your teeth. You don't always feel like brushing your teeth before you go to bed, but you do it anyway. And you may not feel like just reading two or three sentences out of the Declaration of 76 or the Constitution every day, but if you really value freedom, you'll discipline yourself just to read two or three. Remember this. I was told this a long time ago, 10 minutes a day, 10 minutes a day on any subject for 10 years, and you will be the expert. 10 minutes a day on any subject for 10 years, and you will be the expert. And if you put in 10 minutes a day on any subject, every day now, that's discipline, you'll do 15 years. You'll like it. And once you have disciplined yourself to something like that, it takes a little time. Shucks, at the end of a year, if you do that with the Declaration of 76 and the Constitution, at the end of a year, you'll know more than anybody in 17 counties around you. I guarantee. Because the Constitution and our Declaration of 76 are those documents, like Mark Twain said, a classic book is a book that everybody says you ought to read, but nobody's ever read. Well, that's the way our Constitution and the Declaration of 76 are. Everybody says you ought to read them, ought to know them. But hardly anybody really does. And so I said it before you, make it a point to your life that you're going to learn something about those documents. They'll seem foreign to you at first because they're in older language, like the Bible is, by the way. But only with discipline is the man that plays the fiddle, only after discipline is he free to do what he wants, to play what he wants. It is discipline that gives him freedom. Discipline is the only road to freedom. And discipline comes down to one thing. One thing. From own experience, and I think other people would probably shore me up on this, discipline comes down to one thing, and that one thing is dailiness. Dailiness. As again, just like brushing your teeth, it's a daily thing. You want to keep your teeth, you brush them. Well, that's enough for one evening. I appreciate it again, John, Gerard, and anybody has any comments they want to make or questions, I'm sticking around a little bit. But.
Okay. We do have some people in the queue. I don't know if there are questions for me or you or whoever, but I'll start if we're ready. Okay, let's go. We got Harley from Vermont. Go ahead, Harley. You've been unmuted.
Hello, Brent and Gerard and everybody. John, I hadn't gotten into the queue last couple times, so boy, I jumped right on it, and I got to get my question together here. My big one right now is on people like Parit Bahara there ignoring the fact that there's 650,000 emails and all the metadata that could and should be released to start tracking down these disgusting pedophiles. And what you mentioned earlier about refusing to work with the local police. And that pretty much tells you that he's a bot man, and that's just my opinion and opinion of some other people with evidence. But, you know, the whole movement for judicial reform, I'm on Facebook going through this 10th Amendment Center thing, and they're being attacked by the usual suspects at the Southern Poverty Law Center. And, you know, I mean, this stuff just can't go fast enough because you can't call the government to account and anything until you get them to stop screening every single case with merit. And, you know, we want to keep Trump on side, and we need to, you know, hope that he's going to do things for us. But at the same time, like Gerard said, you know, the next one might say, you know, what we're not in support of. But I totally agree with the thing about it never made any sense to me that a district judges like that could, you know, trump the decision, no matter intended, but, you know, that's supposed to be in the president's hands. So, you know, he obviously doesn't have quite a full grasp, or he's under Talmudic law control, you know, Star Chambers type control, and when it comes out of his mouth that we should follow the rule of law, or we have to follow the law, what law is he talking about? You know, so I mean, I'm just going to drop it there. That's my little, you know, bomb, and I'll take my answer off air and yield.
Well, thank you, Harley. And the other possibility, and I don't know, maybe I'm giving too much benefit of the doubt, I'm thinking that maybe even if he knew that he had the authority to tell them all, you know, that he could thumb his nose at them, that he didn't want to pull that right away, that maybe he wanted them to show their colors and reveal themselves. I mean, basically, when that judge did that, he committed treason. And it seems to me that, you know, if you gauge what Trump did when he came in, he didn't turn around and just fire everybody. He left a lot of those Democratic appointees in their place. And as they did stupid things, he got rid of them one by one by one. I think there's a method to that madness. And I don't know that this judge was part of that, but he certainly became that. I mean, look at that guy is out there now. We know about it. And he needs to be sanctioned. And he needs to be corrected. And if you saw the film of Chavez questioning him, and he said, oh no, the Supreme Court is the last word on the law. That's a lie. It's not the Supreme Court. It's us. It's the people. So his statements, his smug replies, you know, we're going to comment on that video, Ollie and I, on a news section. That's our first, one of the first things that we're going to put out there. You need to go look at that video that Ollie has cut to us, from a 12-minute to a 6-minute, because it's the part where he really, really, I don't want to say perjures, but he commits treason, the judge, answering the question. And Chavez, I think, knows more than he, you know, he went around and asked him some questions to try to bring him around to where he went. I mean, and he did a pretty good job, but they always stopped short of you know, saying, well, you know, the law, here's what the law says, and you're committing treason. I don't know why they're afraid to go there. I certainly wouldn't be. So I don't know. I don't know where it's all going to go. I don't know what the game plan is. You know, Thornton says that the king used to hold the court because he wanted to put the show on before he disciplined somebody, whether it was to put him to death or put him in jail or whatever he was going to do. Rather than just seem like a tyrant, he would hold the court. And look, the king didn't have to hold the court. He was the sovereign at the time. He could do whatever he
Gerard,
wanted.
Gerard, your voice is very low.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that better?
Much better. Much better.
So, you know, is Donald holding court? Is he putting the show on? I don't know. But you know what? We are. We got a case. We're putting on court. And so we need to respond to these things. That's my feeling. This is our chance to grab that bully pulpit, whether it be teaching Trump or chastising Trump or giving our opinion, you know? That's our job. I mean, that's what, and like Brent says, we have a duty. And that's what we're doing here in NLA. We're exercising our duty. And that's what you got to think about. Anyway, thank you, Harley. That was well appreciated. I'm going to go to New York, Michael.
Gerard, thank you very much. Gerard, thank you very much for adding me. Anyway, I contacted last night. I sent out the message for what we spoke about, and they didn't get back to me until just before airtime tonight when you guys were starting the show. And the response was that they are very, very interested in aligning with the National Liberty Alliance. But because of the two-hour limit that they have for the rally on April 1st, they have so many speakers that they're not going to have any time to allow for you guys to speak. But they did say that there will be more, and they will make arrangements the next time that we put it together for you guys to come on down and to give your give the speech, okay?
That's fine. That's good.
Yeah, I just wanted to let them know on
that. Hear that. Yeah.
Yep, but they're very excited, and they're looking forward to working with us.
Good. Well, you know, we got a message that coincides with theirs, and there's no reason that we can't, you know, move ahead together, sort of lock together, as you said.
Absolutely.
We'll try to foster that as we go ahead, as we move ahead here.
Right. And also, I want to be able to get them to accept us and our logo to put in their newsletter each month that they put out. And I'm going to be working on that. And I didn't get a confirmation yet on using theirs for our site yet. But I'm working on it. So
yeah.
I'll keep you guys advised, and we'll just go from there. But that's all the news that I have. I won't take up any more time. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Michael. Good work. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Yep. Have a blessed night, everybody. Thanks. Night.
Night. Okay. And with that, we'll move to, it says, California. Patricia, you've been unmuted. Go ahead. California, Patricia. 4646. Hello, California.
Can you hear me?
I can now.
Okay, good. I had my earphones on. This is Nicolette from California.
How you doing, Nicolette? Good to hear from you.
Good. Thank you. I had a couple of questions because I'm confused on how to get this to work, but one of the questions is, I went to the alliance.org/foreclosure, and it came up with a 404. So I logged in and put foreclosure in the search bar, and it came up with information, but there's no documents. There's no template. There's no link. There's nothing hot that I can go to. And it says something about step one. I don't know what step one is. The second question is in these foreclosure documents that you're going to be, doing a suit and putting them in court, is there information in there concerning true land title? because we no longer have access to the true land title. When we purchase something, they put us in as a deed, a grant deed, and they put us under tenant.
Right. Yeah, and I don't believe that we ever address that. And there, and you can address that. You can get the true title. I mean, and land patent is not the only way. It's between the grantor and the deed. And what you need to accept the deed. There's a way of doing it. They never have you accept the deed, and they leave it open. And that's why they do that, so that they can come in and they can do what they want. See, if you don't go in and accept the deed, now some of the clerks are not letting people do it. Now that's a crime. They cannot stop you. I forget, what's the name of the guy that has the process? And he explains what you're talking about, the grantor and the grantee, and the difference between, you know, the deed. I'll think of it, and I'll mention it later on. I've sent a couple people to his website, and he tells you, he goes through this whole process of accepting the deed. I believe I've given it to Robert Overyule and a couple of them. It's just I'm having a senior moment right now, and you should go on and you should read that so you understand that, so that like when it comes time to do stuff, you make sure that you do those documents so that you don't have that problem, you know.
Well, I accepted the grant deed. I had the grant deed to the land and that they foreclosed on, and they took our land from us. But I still possess the original grant deed to that land.
And
is that what
the,
you're talking about?
Yeah, that's right. What is that guy's name? And it's not that difficult once you get the difference between what they're giving you and what they're doing, the game that they're playing. So you just have to push that issue, and you have to make sure that that's what you have, you know. The mortgage deed is separate from the grant deed. You know what I mean? The mortgage is the mortgage. It's not the property.
I had the grant deed. Why did they get away with foreclosing?
Well, why do you think? You think that they're unlawful. They're making moves because the judges are allowing them to break the law. So, but you see, if you don't know how to protest and hold your feet to the fire to where they can't answer, you know, in law, silence is acquiescence. So when they make a move and they do something and you don't come back immediately and say objection, and then then lay out the crime for what they did, if there's silence, they're comfortable moving. They don't care. Because as far as they're concerned, you didn't know what you were doing. They took advantage of you. Silence is acquiescence, and boom, they steamroll you, you know. And then you know, they're running on the premises. You know, we have it, we control it. Possession is 9/10. You know what I mean? They're just doing the steamroll on you, you know.
Yeah.
And if you go through a lot of the paperwork and stuff, you'll find out that they're doing all kinds of criminal stuff. They're doing, you know, they're perjuring themselves. They're doing all kinds of law breaking. So you have to recognize it when it comes, and you have to be savvy enough to stand up and object to it and put the paperwork in immediately. See, once they realize that you know, and you know that they know and all that stuff, that's when you become a burr under their saddle, and they want to get rid of you because you become more trouble than what you're worth, you know?
Yeah. Well, so, I had done a lot of work. I had done all of my administrative work, all that stuff. But obviously they caught me on something that I wasn't clear to answer on. So, and they just handed it over. They didn't even let me go to court. They just handed it over. So on these foreclosure docs, how do we access them? Because I wasn't able to access.
Well, I think John said he went in. I think there is a problem that needs to be fixed. I thought John said he went in there and he got the 404 error also. So it's not you. It's something that it's something that we have to fix. It's, you know,
they haven't been posted yet, Gerard.
Oh, it hasn't been posted yet.
No, they haven't been posted yet, and that is something we have to fix. John said probably tomorrow or the next day here, half hour, an hour ago. Okay.
Well, that's a good reason you're getting a 404 then.
It sure is. Absolutely, every time.
Okay, fabulous. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Okay, thank you very much. And God bless, and we'll keep you in our prayers because we're all fighting the same battle here.
I have a lot of battles that we're fighting. I also have to figure out how to, unless you guys are also working on this issue, but with the vaccines, I've recently learned that the MMR is the cause of Guillain-Barre, which causes autoimmune. And it left my daughter paralyzed from the waist down, and I still don't know how to go after that yet. So is that something that you guys cover?
Well, it's something that we're going to be covering. We've mentioned it in the lawsuit. We mentioned the healthcare stuff that they're doing and the vaccines in the big lawsuit. So, yeah, we can expand upon that at any time. And there's a movie. Did you see Vaxxed?
I watched some of it. It's too close to me, and I wasn't able to go through it all.
It's hard. It is hard. I know. Yep.
It's just
Robert
close.
De Niro had a autistic son, and he was going to feature that film at the film festival, and they got to him, and they made him take it off. So
Now he's involved with Kennedy, so he's back out there.
He's back out there what, against vaccines?
Yeah, he's back out there working with Kennedy.
Well, look at this. This is so big, they don't mind killing you for this. he's got to be brave. He's got to stay brave. And whatever they did to get to him, and I'm not judging him because I can't walk in his shoes, you know what I'm saying? You know, they threaten your family. Who knows what they told him to make him take that film off of there. But that's a very, very compelling film. Very compelling.
Yeah.
And it is. It's very hard to watch. It's very sad. And while you should be sad, but the next thing you become angry. You should be, you know, that they wouldn't let that film out there because they knew that there would be an outcry. And that's something that we should be passing that around all over the place. We should be posting it. You know, I had a hard time getting it. I finally went on YouTube, and they got a bunch of them that don't work, you know what I mean? And I finally found it, and I watched it on YouTube. And it's hard to get it all in one place, like you can get it in parts. But I did find one, and I don't know how long it'll be there because, you know, YouTube, they have an agenda. They're with Google. They're with the New World Order. So what they do is they make this stuff not work well. They make it very hard to get this information out. You know.
Yeah, I passed it out. I found it. I passed it out to everybody I know.
Yeah, we should be getting DVDs of that. We should be handing it. You know, I mean, our legislators should be watching that. And, you know, that's something that we should think about doing right away in the lawsuit by revealing that, because once we reveal it and they don't do something about it, then they're breaking the law, because this is a direct assault on our youth. I mean, and adults.
Yes, it is. My daughter almost died from this last incident. I mean, after they gave her the shots originally, and in infancy, she was sick after that. She was a changed baby. I mean, I just have one horror story after the next, and she almost died when she was 5. I was able to save her on that one. I ended up learning nutritional things and herbal remedies, and was able to help her until she was 18, when she just turned 19, and she suffered a kidney infection, and that did it. That just wiped her body, and she went into an autoimmune reaction, and it nearly stopped her heart. Because when an autoimmune affects your nervous system controls your muscles, every organ in your body is a muscle. So when your nervous system starts collapsing, it collapses your muscles and thereby collapsing your heart. So she nearly died on this one. Okay. All right, I've got to let it go.
And for some reason, it's worse, the MMR in that is worse for males. And they said at the rate that it's going now, within 20 years, 90% of males will be autistic if we let them go, if we don't stop this. So it's going to be 9 out of 10 males born that get the MMR will become autistic because it's getting worse and worse. Because each generation, they're affecting our DNA and they're affecting our immune systems. And so they're making us weaker and weaker.
Do you know how wrong that is?
I do know how wrong that is.
How many minutes long is that video?
It's about an hour. It's a little over an hour, I think.
Okay, because I have a copy of it, but it says summary. It says 45 minutes long. May not be the whole thing.
It was like an hour and 11. And some of them were not too good, but I bookmarked the one. I have a YouTube downloader. I mean, I should go do it. I didn't do it because I could give it to you.
Yeah.
Because I got the full one, and I thought it was longer than 45 minutes, but I'm not sure. But I'll check into that. It's very important to watch that and get that information out. And that's something that we could push at the same time with this case. You know, we can bring it to the forefront and put it up there. And that's something that, that Donald Trump could probably, facilitate for us to move that quicker,
Well, one of the things that I do is I make a point, whether I know the person or not, but the younger parents, I make a point to inform them and provide links and, all the different things that I am now privy to because of my research over all these years. My daughter's 28 now, by the way, and she's been paralyzed for the last 10 years. So I make a point to get these kids to know what's going on because they're so involved in their lives that they're not aware of these things. I wasn't aware of it. Informing
horrible.
The younger generation, it is horrible. But they created a monster when they did that to my daughter.
Yep. And they're doing it every day, every time you turn around, I mean, I've been fighting them for years. I didn't get any of my kids. My oldest boy, I got him the dead polio vaccine, and he's the only one that got any vaccines, and that's the only one that he got. And I didn't give it to any one of my other kids because I knew way back when. And I did lots and lots of research, and when it wasn't popular, of course, I was able to get away with it more back then because they weren't so strong, They let you get religious exemptions and things like that, But now they're really fighting it. They've really gotten very, very tough about it, and arrogant. And all the data is against them, and all the evidence is against them. And they have whistleblowers that have come forward when they said that it doesn't cause autism. The guys that came out with that study, the scientists, the doctors, he said, we were paid and coerced into saying, he said, the data absolutely does prove that it causes autism, and we skewed the studies so that it came out that it doesn't.
Do you know the guy Mike from Natural News?
Yeah.
Natural News? Okay, well, he's got all that information. He's got all that data on his website. He's got the whistleblowers. He's got the CDC reports. He's got everything. So if anybody wants to look, just go to Natural News. You'll find all of that evidence right there. Now, you said you already filed a suit? about this, or you're going to?
No, no. In our big lawsuit, we mentioned the vaccines. We mentioned the mercury and the stuff in the vaccines. I'm pretty sure in the big lawsuit where we hit everything, go down through there, you'll see the vaccines mentioned. You see, the fact that we mentioned it means we can bring it up. In other words, we just mentioned it. The reason we mentioned it, because when you put a lawsuit in, if you don't mention it in the beginning, you can't bring it up later. Okay?
Yeah.
So
now, is this something is this something that the members were able to take part in, or is this something that just your organization itself?
No. This is the common law grand jury. This is for the people. So I have a certain vision, and some of us have this vision that while we're marching through the courts, as you push your own cases through, you can cite our case and say, look it, I need an injunction here. Like if they're insisting that you take vaccines, and what you do is, and we should expound upon it more, you say, I want an injunction on my case because there's a case in federal court that actually addresses my problem, and it's the common law grand jury lawsuit number such and such and such and such, and you can attach your case to our case, and that will make it grow. You see?
And this is something that only the grand jury does?
No. The suit, we put the suit in, made the claim. So they have to answer it. We said, look at the CDC, this, that, the president, the Congress, they need to answer it. And so if they're feeding us poisons, and we made the claim that they're feeding us poisons, and they haven't answered it yet, you can attach to our suit because it's the people. And it's the same. It addresses your problem. And so you say, I want this issue. I want an injunction so you can't move against me until such time that that case is decided, because that case will have an effect and a precedent on my case. You understand what I'm saying? In other words, our federal lawsuit will affect your personal federal lawsuit or wherever you're filing it.
You're saying that I would be filing a suit because I haven't filed any suit. I don't have enough evidence.
Well, you know, we're right now we're taking cases for mortgages and stuff. At some point, we may take cases for vaccines. You know what I mean? I don't know. You know, this is huge. I mean, we have so many wrongs in America. Where do you start and where do you stop? You know, our main thing was in the beginning was we wanted to file suits for children that were in danger with CPS and people losing their homes. We figured that those were the most egregious in the nation. But what could be more egregious than vaccine than being damaged by vaccine? How do you triage this? I don't know. There's just so much wrongdoing.
Yeah.
So anybody that knows how to file, to write paperwork, they can file their own federal suit and they can attach it to our federal suit, and we will be expounding upon that more as we go along. That's why we're looking for researchers in the IRC. We want to get all this information, and you're right. The health ranger, he has everything we need. We don't need to do any more research than he's done. He's got everything that we could possibly want as far as evidence goes. Basically, we should be able to copy his site and throw it in the lawsuit and say, answer this evidence, see this evidence, boom, right? So that's what we're looking to do. And once that's done, then you can attach to it. You can say, look it. My suit is the same as this suit, and they need to answer that. And when they answer that, that's gonna affect me, and it absolutely will.
We can do it when you start working with individuals. Yeah.
Look at the more people we get in that committee that know how to write papers, the quicker things will move. and we'll be able to file these cases and throw the affidavits into our case. It doesn't mean you can't file your own case. I would like to see people filing their own cases and attaching them to ours. You know,
yeah, the only problem with that is that we don't have enough physical evidence to prove and establish it. And the only thing that we actually do have, or at least the only thing that I have been able to come across, is the information such as the Ranger, Natural News. But
well, you don't think that's enough evidence?
It absolutely is enough evidence. The only problem is for me as an individual to bring that evidence to court, I have to be able to prove and establish that it applies directly to the physical causes of my daughter. And I don't know how to get that. I don't.
No, you don't, because the fact of the matter is this case will prove that they're pumping poison in us. And we don't look at, do we have to prove, if the government says everybody needs, if the government does like Jim Jones says, and everybody has to drink cyanide, do you have to prove that the cyanide you drank killed or maimed somebody you love? No. It's a foregone fact. See, so when you come in, it'll be a foregone fact. They won't be able to say you don't have standing. Did she get the vaccine? Yes, she got the vaccine. Is she paralyzed? Yes, she's paralyzed. That's all the evidence you need. That's it. It's end of story. The evidence is all being presented in this case. Beyond the shadow of a doubt, the jury is going to rule on it. I mean, you put all that evidence together that he has, and the fact of the matter is that the vaccines are so damaging and so dangerous that nobody should take them. That's going to be the fact. It's, you know, it's just like fluoride in the water. It's another one. There's no evidence that fluoride stops tooth decay when you take it internally. It was never meant to be taken internally. It's rat poison. They put it in rat poison, and they got us convinced
right.
that it's good for our teeth. And when it comes out, that's another big one. It causes all these hip replacements and stuff. We never had them. We have them because people are drinking fluoride. It's making the bones brittle. It's doing all kinds of things. It's causing learning disabilities. It's causing Alzheimer's. It's causing all these myriad of problems that they're selling drugs to cover up and make money, the pharmaceuticals. Look, only the devil could put together such a plan that intertwines the way it does and feeds off each other. It's diabolical that how this web interlocks, and only a diabolical force such as Satan could put this thing together and have it work the way it does. You know, I mean, they
yeah.
got stuff going on that you can't believe, and this is from years ago. I'm going to be 60 this year, and when my mother was having 7 children, she had asthma, and she was going to the doctor, and she was getting asthma medicine, and then they give you adrenaline, and your heart speeds up. So then they give you something to slow your heart down, and they put you on this chemical cocktail, right? They give you this inhaler, they give you all this stuff. Next thing that happened, she started having this uterine bleeding that wouldn't go away. So then they send her into the gynecologist, and the gynecologist, oh, you need a D&C. He does a D&C. You know, every 6 months, it was a cycle. You know, it's repeating 6, 8, 9 months, same thing. She did not get better until she sat down and read all the medication she was and looked up the side effects, and lo and behold, guess what? That asthma effect, guess what one of the side effects of the asthma medicine was? Uterine bleeding. So the asthma doctors feeding the gynecologist. Now, does he know he's doing that? Of course he doesn't. But it's set up like that. They're feeding each other. Everybody's compartmentalized. They're looking at the body like it's little pieces, and one doesn't affect the other. That's what they're teaching them in medical school, to have tunnel vision. And who's paying? We're paying with money
yeah.
and with health. And so that's why I say it's diabolical, you know? They put you on 30 different medications. They've never studied more than the interactions of two medicines ever. and they got people on 5, 6, 10, 20, 30 medications. They have no idea how one reacts to the other. And when you go in with a side effect, you know what they do? They prescribe on the side effect another medication. It's
yes,
crazy. It's insane.
I know all that.
And it's craziness. And the fact that, you look at it, it's going to go down in history that these were the dark ages of medicine right now. Chemotherapy, don't get me going. I'll go, we got to get going. I don't want to get on it. This is a favorite subject of mine, as you can tell. I spent years and years researching this. And the answers are simple. You know, liposomal vitamin C, you can cure cancer with it. There's all kinds of simple things. Clean air, clean water, clean food. That's what it's about. Back to God's law, just like common law, good food, you know, organic, grown in good soil, you know. That's the answer. Yeah. That's what they don't want you to know. My goodness, you know, we would live to be, look at Jefferson wrote papers to the day he died, and he died well into his 80s, almost 90. I think he was 90. I don't know, I'm sure, but, you know, they lived very productive lives, and they didn't lose their minds before they died, you know?
Yeah.
Like we do today. You start losing your mind in your 50s today, you start having senior moments, you know? So that's the difference. But I'm going to go on and get to the next person. I'm sorry. I don't want to put you off, but that's – we'll talk. Bring it up again. Look, we'll talk about the vaccine stuff, and we'll – we're definitely on it, is all I can tell you, okay? We have a lot of work to do at NLA. We need lots of people of varied intelligence and abilities that can help us with the research, that can gather this information, that we can archive it, and we can put it in the cases, and we can write the papers. I mean, we've already written a big one, but we need affidavits, and we need other people's cases to come in. And you can see this thing could mushroom into a huge thing. You know, once the dominoes start falling, they're going to fall fast, you know?
Is there a list at the NLA that has just a basic list of things that you need researched? Because I'm a good researcher, but I...
IRC, talk to Jan, get on with our investigative research committee. We have a whole list of things to do. And look, you're going to find a niche where you fit. I'm telling you. I can tell by talking to you that you have abilities that we can use. And so you might as well put them to use and do your duty, because it is your duty now that you know these things. And look, put your efforts where they're going to count the most. You know, and trying to do this by going into courts as a single person is never going to work. It's never going to work because... like I said, they will kill you if they think they can get away with it. If all they got to do is kill you to stop the problem, they got no problem with that. You know, look at Robert De Niro, very rich, very powerful, very famous, and they shut him up. He has an autistic son. He has every reason in the world to stand up to them, and he pulled the film from the film festival, right? So you know. God only knows what they told him or what they threatened him with. Of course, he's back now because he's probably fortified himself and he's done some stuff so that he's not in fear anymore. Whatever he did, or he's just ticked off enough that he's going to do it anyway, I don't know, because men get to a certain point and they don't care anymore. And what they don't realize is they've pushed us to that point and they're too arrogant, too stupid to realize that they should stand down before they suffer the full wrath of we the people. Because it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Look, God,
I think they're too far gone. They're too far gone. Their minds are too far gone. They're power hungry. Bloodlust too far gone.
They're going to fall. They're going to fall with the rest of them then, because, you know.
Yeah.
And
I'm good with that.
Yeah, well, so am I. But anyway, okay, thank you very much. It's good talking to you. And I'm sure we'll hear more from you. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, okay. Okay, California Fred, you're on.
Well, thank you, Gerard. I wanted to make a comment. That first judge that came out and went against that executive order, the second one of Trump's, Obama visited him 1 week before he did that. I don't know if that's fake news or not, but that's what I saw. Obama went to Hawaii and visited him, and a week later he comes out objecting to this executive order.
Yeah,
and I heard it was 2 days before.
And that's
well, like I said, I don't know. I don't know if it's fake news. How can you tell anymore?
I know. It's like, look at the fact that it's out there is good anyway. You know what I mean? I lost my train of thought there, but Obama should be in jail. I'm sorry, but he's got a 30,000 man crew in Washington to subvert the government, and the evidence they have on him, on everything that he did, and all the treason he committed, and all the pedophilia that he was involved in and that he facilitated, he should be behind bars. I don't know why he's not, except for the fact that I think that we have to have enough judges and prosecutors and untainted juries before we do something like arrest Obama or Hillary to make sure that justice is served. Or, you know, you only get one chance to do it right. And maybe that's okay. Why Trump is holding
off.
I
want to make a suggestion.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, about Obama, you know, check this out. Simone Edmonds, you've heard of her, boilingfrogs.com. She was an FBI investigator. She was an interpreter. And she was investigating corrupt judges. And she found that the corrupt judges, the higher their office, the more corrupt they were. In other words, the judges were corrupt and they could be blackmailed into making decisions. That's one way they're holding the line in the courts. So I think her information needs to somehow be vetted and brought in the National Liberty Alliance. And then we use that information to go after these guys through indictment. Yeah, boot them right off the bench for cause. Okay, I'm going to yield.
And, you know, you're absolutely right, Fred. All we have to do is make sure that we got our grand jury administrators in place, and we need to start in one place. We need to. That's where, when we lock hips, when all of us get together, when Trump finally gets together with us, and us with them, and all these other liberty groups, and we lock hips, and we say, okay, it's we the people coming forth now in our own grand juries. Using U.S. versus Williams, that you can't tell us how to assemble these grand juries, and we're doing it ourselves with four administrators per county. Shut up. We're doing it. We don't care. And at that point, we indict them. It's done. It's done in one day. Those guys, the ones that we indict will be in jail, and the ones that we don't get to will be running like rats from a sinking ship. So you're going to see it. I mean, John quotes this quote in the Bible, and he says, in that day I will slay Leviathan. That's pretty encouraging, because in that day means in time. He's not talking about after time. He's talking about in our time. So how's that going to happen? I think it can happen if we're successful. I think if we uphold the laws of God, the laws of nature and nature's God, I think it'll happen. So we're well on our way. We got to put our, you know, our shoulder down and our nose to the grindstone and keep pushing, because, you know, a lot of people are doing a lot of good work right now. You know, I'm finding more and more stuff on the internet that is more and more on point. People get lost in the fiction, but I'm finding more and more stuff where people are coming around to understanding what the common law is and what the fiction is, and they're getting back to the Constitution. And it's pretty amazing. The truth will prevail as long as somebody can proclaim it. And people are starting to proclaim the truth. You know?
Fucker.
Okay, anyway. I'd like to make one little comment about this. Okay, the CIA cannot spy on the American people So they spy on England, and then England spies on us, and then they switch information. Well, isn't that like treason to have another country and work with them to spy on your own citizens?
Well, you see, look at the NSA spies on everybody. Everybody. Every nation. Everybody.
I know. But,
what happens is now that information's out there. Now, if Obama wants that information, he has to fill out a form and they give it to him and there's a paper trail. But instead, he goes to England and then England asks, now the NSA shares that information with England with no paper trail. That's how they do it. All we got to do is take the NSA out. That's what we have to do. That place in Nevada with all those computers and I had heard that they need all this water to cool them and the mayor was going to cut the water off. I don't know what happened to that. There should be some smart bombs in there. That place should blow up because it's that bad. I don't know. Some special forces guys. I mean, is this subversion of the government? Look at these guys are enemies of the state. And the military needs to take them out. We need, you know, these judges. We should have judges that are sanctioning them, and they should pull the plug on that operation. And tomorrow wouldn't be soon enough because it's an egregious violation. You talk about having soldiers in your home. You got the government in your living room because they got two-way televisions and smartphones. And they're listening to us, and they can pull this stuff out of archive. I mean, they're not listening to us in the fact that they're listening to us, but they have it on record, and they can go back anytime they want you, and they can go back through the conversation. When you become that person of interest, they go back through all your phone conversations. And today they convict on conspiracy and thought crime. They don't even need evidence. All they need is this conversation right here. As far as they're concerned,
they do parallel construction. What they do is go back in time to something you said with a voice fingerprint. They pull it out of the archives. Yep. Then they patch together some kind of a spiel, whether they have to manufacture it or not. And they will not reveal the source where it came from because that involves a warrant. And they do the same damn thing with these systems that the local law enforcement's buying to spy on you.
Well, they don't have to do too much spying on me because I tell them to their face.
No, know? It's your cell phone, your location, where you're going.
I know.
They turn it on to hear everything you're saying.
Oh, yeah, I understand that. And look, like you said, they can manufacture a conversation. I saw the software they have I could put your face in a video on somebody else's body doing something. So essentially what they've done is they've made video evidence not reliable anymore. Because I don't care what that video shows. I have the ability to show a video. I could show you killing the president. I could show Fred picking up a gun and your voice saying Allah Akbar or whatever, and we could do that. We have the technology to do that. You know, so I don't know, where do we go from here?
You know, fellas, it isn't just that one big center. There are seven other ancillary NSA facilities in the country now. Does that make you feel better?
Those are just the ones you know about. You need to audit.
Good research project for somebody. We know there's eight of them total, and, you know, what others do they have?
Eight of them? So we need eight smart bombs instead of one.
Right.
Anyway, I'm sorry I had to go answer the door. Anyway, whatever has to happen, we have to do it. So I don't know what the answer is, but I think this is the answer, what we're doing. So that's what we have to do. All right, Fred, you done? I'm going to go on to the next guy if you got nothing else. We're getting...
Well, I don't want to take up the last half hour. Go ahead. Get the other guy.
Okay. Thanks, Fred. Okay. You've been unmuted. Call prepper.
Yeah, Terry from New Jersey.
Hey, Terry. How you doing?
Good. I was wondering why under the docket that the where it says papers filed, that they're not in chronological order, because it's kind of confusing to me. Sometimes you come in late to a call that John might be talking about his latest paper, and, you know, for example, you know, the one that he talked about this afternoon is right in the middle of all the papers filed, and I just wondering if there was a rhyme or a reason why you do it the way you do.
I don't know.
Yes, there is, but I'm not sure exactly what it is. He's chosen those numbers, you know, starting out with the 1001, 2, 3, 4, 5, and on up to 19, I think. And he does have a method.
Oh, there's
the reason.
Yeah, there's a category there. There's a category of what we're citing, so that when they go through the case and we do these informations and these things, that they all that they'll fall in the same category. See, when we're putting the case together, even though they're not in the order, like when you're seeing them all mixed up, but when they go in the case, they're gonna those numbers will all be under the same category of the same subject, because we're working on myriad subjects. So we have to put them together in the case in order to make it easier to read, you know, where you could go, okay, we're going to do vaccinations. So anything that pertains to vaccinations is going to have a certain number. And eventually it'll all go in one place, and so that in the index of the case, I'm pretty sure that this is how he's setting it up. They'll be able to go and look up that issue, you know?
Okay. It doesn't make much sense to me, but, you know, I guess I just got to get in earlier and, you know, get the, you know, the case number or whatever. You know, that lady, you mentioned something earlier about property rights. I remember listening to Michael Badnarik. He said the only state with allodial title is Texas. So I know that's what they call the highest bundle of rights. In New Jersey, they have a deed. It's called the Tenants in the Entirety. And that right there, that tells you that you don't own anything. You're a tenant. So I think it's also interesting how we came, you know, to reach a point in this country where, you know, you had flesh and blood people owning property to a point where now it's only political fictions who own the property. And that's something that should be looked into one of these days.
Look at we all, this whole business that we don't have a allodial title is a fallacy, because I didn't buy my property with any kind of lien on it from anybody. All these properties had a allodial title at one time. When did we lose them?
That's what I'm saying.
You know what I mean? So it's all done through fraud, you know?
Right. Right.
So
we're
not
going to
give them credibility. They can't prove that we don't have a allodial title. I paid money. I got my property. I contracted with you to buy it. How do they figure that they got their finger in that? Show me the contract. Show me where it is. They can't show you. They can't show you the document where you entered into a contract where they have any kind of lien or anything in that property. And our forefathers didn't set up a thing that we couldn't own property, since property is the basis that all our rights land in. It's the beginning of our rights is property, and your first piece of property is your body. So we, you see, they don't even believe that you own your body. That's why they can tell you got to vaccinate it, you got to do this, you got to do that, because you don't even own your body. So if you think it's bad enough that you don't have a allodial title, you don't even have a allodial title to your body, as far as they're concerned, because they're evil and they're fiction, and we're not going to give them that credibility. We don't recognize that, and we absolutely do have a allodial title because it comes through our right to contract with each other, And when these land patents were given in New York, here I know for a fact, they were given free and clear. There was very few of them that were given. There were some of them that were given that said that they should raise taxes when they sold it in order to provide for education and schooling, that they should be sold for that.
Well, I agree with you 1,000%, and if more people became aware of the scam, that would really cause a landslide in our favor.
Right. That's what they don't want. That's what they don't want to let out there.
And I got a funny feeling you can track this back to the Bar Association.
Absolutely. You know, you can't even... The Bar Association is a joke, because if you want to put a complaint in, they won't even, you can't even find, they're all independent agencies. I watched a video on the Association of Judges, and he goes into the Bar Association and how he tried to make a complaint and all the runaround they gave him so that nobody answers to anybody. You know, and ultimately, they're all in Roma, not Rome, Roma. That's where they're run under.
Well, that's absolutely true, because in New Jersey, if you got a complaint against a judge, you have to file it with the Committee on Administrative Conduct, and of course, it's stacked with judges and lawyers, and they put maybe a token layman in there. You know, just to make it, try to look like it's legit. And these people are running scams all day long against the people, and the legislature had no control over them. They won't get involved. They think they can't control them. So I yield.
Are you there, Gerard?
I don't know what happened to Gerard.
He must be sitting on his mute button.
Wait.
Although my panel's kind of gone down, it's not active anymore. Maybe he's got the same problem. Let me Skype him. Well, my panel shows absolutely nothing. Can anybody hear me?
I hear you.
Okay, Terry, you and I are the only two left on the earth here. What happened?
I don't know. Maybe we should call it a night. It's 11:46 anyway.
Yeah, I'm wondering. Well... let me see. We have North Carolina, April. Let me unmute her and see if she has something to add. But can you hear me, April? April from North Carolina. You're unmuted. And you can't hear me either. Oh boy, I got a big hole on the panel. Well, my panel is non-functional. Let me bow out and see if I can bring it back up. We may talk to you next week if I don't get back up. Okay, I can hear people, see people. Okay, let me punch the magic planger.
Hey, can you hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay, now I'm unmuted. You had me muted.
Well, you show us you're muted now. You didn't before. Okay, April, what's your comment, question?
The first thing I wanted to tell you is you all are sounding like you're underwater. Everybody's voice is echoing.
Still?
yeah, still. I think it has to be in the phone line or something, but it's echoing. But what I wanted to make a comment on was that lady that was on before talking about the immunization shots.
Right.
And what we could do about it, well, the habeas corpus is kind of doing something about it right now. I mean, we can go further after we start getting them all in as things start rolling. Most of the people that they're putting in the jails are people that have been affected by the shot. And my son is a good example of it. He's autistic bipolar, and I guarantee he's gotten a lot of those shots from places that we live. So there's a lot of people, not just physically where they can't do anything anymore, but mentally it's affecting them. And as we get the habeas corpuses going, eventually a bunch of us can get together and put a nice big lawsuit in against them. What they did to our children, but we need it's all going to happen in numbers. Nobody can do it by themselves. It has to happen in numbers.
Yeah, that's true. What we need are large numbers of affidavits.
Yep.
That's the basis for the whole thing. Yep. Exactly.
Yep. So I wanted to let them know that our habeas corpus is the first step towards getting restitution for what they did to our children with the immunization shots.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I would have to agree.
She's great. I'd love to have her on our team because she sounds like that she could do a lot of good.
Yeah, I've already given her number and particulars to the IRC group, so they'll be contacting her shortly, probably tomorrow.
Yeah.
So that's we should get some input from her. Yep.
Yep. But that's all I had to say, so I bow out.
Okay. Let me look to see if Gerard still shows being alive here, but I don't see his panel up.
It could be that program, because the way you all were sounding, every time you were talking, I mean, when you listen back on it, you sound like he's underwater, so there has to be something in the program that's not running right.
Okay.
Because I could hear you when you were talking, but you couldn't hear me. You know, when you hit mute, unmute, the first time it went unmute, but immediately went back to mute again.
Hmm. Well, that was uncalled for.
Yeah, so Gerard might be having the same problem.
Yeah, but I can't find him as being signed in anymore, so he hasn't gotten back in even. Okay.
Okay.
Very good. Thank you very much. Okay.
Right.
Well, let me try again and see if we can move up one. But my panel does not move. Maybe it did, finally. We have Dennis from Georgia.
Yeah, you there?
Yep, we're here.
All right.
I'm here.
I just wanted to tell you that you've had a lot of static in
noise on the line down this way.
Okay.
All night long. It started in when Brett Winters came on.
Okay, do you get the feeling that maybe they're paying attention to us now and we're doing some things?
Probably. That's probably the cause.
I would think so.
I watch the Alex Jones program, and it used to be I could tune it in and dial it in any way I wanted to watch it at any hour of the day after the broadcast was over. But now they've taken control of that, so you just can't see it anymore except when you turn it on, you play it all the way through. That's the only way you can get what he had to say.
Right. Yeah, we're being attacked on many, many fronts, I'm afraid, at this point in time. We're having problems even losing emails and stuff like that sent through the Internet system.
Yes, I think so. But I did want to let you know you had lots of noise tonight. It was just sounded like popcorn going off.
Okay, sorry about that.
That's okay.
I wish there was something we could do about it.
I don't think it's I believe it's in the system somehow or another, or else they're interfering.
Okay, well, we'll have another call Wednesday. We'll find out if it's still there.
Yeah, okay. That's all I got.
Okay, thank you very much for that.
Yes, sir.
Well, Fred, you're back on. California Fred.
Thank you, sir. I have a question about funding. How does the funding work with NLA? How can we be funded? Through the government.
Well, right.
I'm talking about for investigations and everything that they're supposed to fund us. How come we don't have money as the people?
Well, at this point in time, it would come with strings attached. Eventually, the common law grand juries, jury administrators, would be funded out of the local county budget for the judiciary. But John is...
Would that be through the committees of safety? Would that be through the committees of safety?
No. Hopefully, it would come straight from the regular budget that is set aside for the county court system that funds the people in the courthouse and all that sort of thing. The judges, the whole thing. So it would be taken out of that for the part that we would be using.
Now, it seems to me that the biggest thing that National Liberty Alliance could do at this point is the jury instructions, attack them and make them comply with what the Constitution says.
Well, to do that, we need enforcement.
We do have enforcement. We have U.S. Marshals. We have sheriffs. And they are in every courtroom.
Yes.
And that's what I'm trying to say. Who is greater than we, the people? Who would give us instructions, and how can they? That's what we need to reverse right there.
Yep. As you well know, we are not in control at this point in time. So they will do pretty much what they want with us at this point in time.
No. It's only
yes,
an
they
illusion.
Do.
It's only an illusion. We are in control. They just don't want to admit it.
Right. Either that or they don't know it.
The day will come when, their money is what? Fiat? Debtor notes? Not worth nothing anyway.
Right.
Where's the substance in our world? They have hijacked everything. When you have nothing to lose, you got everything to gain. They are going to tremble in their boots.
Well, that time is coming.
That's
just
what I'm
not quite
at.
Here. Anything else, Fred?
I don't know. We're trying to chew up a few minutes here. You got 4 minutes, right?
Well, we've got three or four people yet would like to make
comments.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I didn't think anybody was in the queue. I'm out. Bye.
Okay. Thanks, Fred. John Ward, VoIP caller.
Bill Randley here. I got several things. One, I can talk to a gal that's had this, and she's got a reader program, so I can pass it on about getting stuff for the drugs. Two, I'm involved with a case here in Schuyler County. Maya?
Yes?
Yeah, all right. In Schuyler County, which is a burn ticket that was illegal, and consequently we are going after him. What happened was, that was key, is I became counsel when I proposed the argument that Miranda states that you cannot abrogate the rights of the individual. When the judge heard that, I was in as counsel. So that folks would be able to be interested in. And the other thing is that the counties and the towns are upset with our governor, and they want to solve these problems, and we can probably work through them to get ourselves in. And that's what I have to say.
Okay. Very good. Thank you for that. Now, my panel is totally messed up. I'm going to try and unmute Montana Dan. Does that work?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Yeah. I was wondering if Brent's still on and if he would comment on the Lodial title if he'd like to.
He was here a minute ago. Brent? Brent, are you still with us? Looking through.
Oh, I think I'm.
Yeah.
I think I'm on now.
Yep, you're on.
Okay. Well, I don't profess to be an expert on a Lodial title, but what I know about it, I learned in the mining business. That's why I first ran across it before I'd heard other people talk about it. That's been a few decades ago. And I discovered that land taken in patent on mining claims, the mining law of 1872, which is still in force for some strange reason, the government and the environmentalists are breaking their picks on the mining law. It's still in force. It was the companion law to the Homestead Act of 1863, I believe it was. And along with that, that was to populate the agricultural lands of the United States. Well, that was fulfilled, so the Homestead Act is now done away with by official act of Congress, but the mining law, which was passed in 1872 with the purpose of populating the arid, mineralized lands of the United States, that has not been fulfilled. And so that law is still in place. And with that, it's analogous to the Homestead Act. If economic values of minerals are found on a mining claim, then the person that has found them and has taken possession of the mineral rights on that claim on federal land can apply for a land patent from the federal government. A land patent, what that means is, it's an old word, just means that a letter will be written, a letter from the United States, signed or sealed by the whoever is the president at that time, granting title of land that had been held by the United States to the recipient. Now, where I'm from, we used to get abstracts of title for all land, and if you go through the abstract, you trace it back, and we'd do chain of title searches to establish the validity of title. You just start at the top, and you start working your way back until you get all the way back, and where I come from, you get all the way back to a grant, and it generally was a lot of them I saw were signed by Andrew Jackson, President of the United States, because that's when that part of the world was populated. People came there, paid their $5 an acre or whatever it was, and after they had moved in on the land, that was before the Homestead Act, in the early 1800s, and title would be granted. Well, it's the same thing. Title was granted by letters of patent. Patent means original. They just, from the sovereign to the man. And the mining claims now are the same way. However, since Bill Clinton, there's been a moratorium on land patents on mining claims. So as a practical matter, you can't get those right now. I don't know how long that'll last. It may last forever. It may not last very long. I don't know. But when you get title from the United States, title is pretty clean. pretty clean. There's no opportunity for anybody to challenge a title like that. That title is, there's not a long chain. There's no opportunity for confusion. There's no overlapping boundaries. There's just one transfer. And I know men that own title, families that own titles that have never been transferred. They've been transferred from the United States of America, the government of the United States, to the fellow that discovered minerals, for example. And that is called allodial title. But the allodial title, now that's an old word too. It goes clear back to the Nordic tribes. Scandinavian tribes is an old Scandinavian word, a Germanic word, and what it means is that allodial title is title that has no encumbrances. The man that holds that title doesn't owe nobody nothing on his land. The land is his, free and clear of all encumbrances, and that means taxes too. Now, again, as a practical matter, and a lot of people that have tried to figure out a way to get a allodial title, and it hasn't worked for them. All of those doctrines don't mean anything to the evil empire. The policy of the evil empire is to kick your butt and take your stuff. I didn't coin that phrase, but I think it's a good one, and it gets the point. That's all it amounts to, is domination. Domination of men. The law of the land demands domination of the land, and you dominate the land and serve other men. And everything in our law of the land is bent toward dominating the land and serving men. Everything in the law of the city is bent toward dominating men and worshiping the land, worshiping an environmentalism, to put it in a nutshell. But allodial title is a title that used to exist, but then as time went along and the Scandinavian tribe, the Norwegians, and then the Anglo-Saxons and the Danes, as they invaded England and populated it, they brought with them, eventually the Normans came from the coast of France. They were Norwegian, actually. They moved in with their understanding of law. When William the Conqueror came to England, and this spells our land policy in our own country. All that we have in our understanding of land ownership in all of our states comes from William. He got it, of course, from other places, but what he said was this. When he got there, he had about 6,000 men with him. And he had about 200 men that were right under him, immediate to him. And he said, I own all of the land in England. I own it personally. And I'm going to parcel it out in about 200 chunks to my 200 leading men. And those men will hold of the king, that's what he said, hold rights. And as long as they produce X number of knights for 40 days a year, fully equipped for battle, and the number of knights that each man would owe as a yearly fee, fully trained and fully equipped, would be accorded to how much land they were granted by the acre, we would say. And that was a tax on land, and that's the way he established national defense. If you didn't produce X number of knights mounted on a horse, fully equipped and trained for battle for 40 days each year, then he would take your rights in that land away and give it to somebody else. But those fellows, they didn't have a allodial title. The only fellow that had a allodial title was the king. Well, he said he had a allodial title, but let's get real. The only one that has a allodial title is the creator of all things, the creator of land. And at common law, he has a allodial title. He's the only one that doesn't owe anybody anything. He owes nobody nothing. God owns all the land. He says, the land is mine. In the Bible, he says this. The land is mine. It's translated usually when you see the phrase earth, E-A-R-T-H. The earth is mine and all that in it is. That's the way it's phrased. It belongs to God, the production of it. But what that word translated earth means better, I think better, a better translation is land. L-A-N-D. And the reason I say that is because that's what the word means. It doesn't. They have no contemplation of a planet Earth. When we think of Earth, usually we think of a planet. Not that that's what the word always means. If I have a handful of Earth, well, I have a handful of dirt. That's land. But Eretz, the Hebrew word, means land. And God is the allodial land lord. But let's get practical about it. Practical. What does that really mean? That means that he doesn't owe anybody anything. We are tenants of the land under him. And all the land of the earth, of the planets, as I had said earlier this evening, is precious to God. It's so precious to him that he charges us with the chief duty of taking care of the land. And he says, I'm going to turn the tenancy of the land over to you. The Bible tells us that he has divided the land, all of the land that he has made up among the several tribes and tongues and nations of people. And he allows them to stay on the land as allodial landlord. He is the allodial landlord. He owes nobody nothing. And he allows men to stay on the land as long as they don't break the conditions of land tenancy. And the conditions of land tenancy we find in the prototype of all land deeds that was given to the descendants of the man Israel. And that land deed we call the Book of Deuteronomy. It's the fifth book of the Bible. That's a land deed. And it's set forth in the same order that our land deeds that we file at the courthouse are set forth. Recitals, detailed description of the land using the meets and bounds method, drawing a geographic figure on the surface of the land. It starts in one place, goes around, comes back to the same place. Well, that Deuteronomy does that. And then it sets forth the conditions of land tenancy in rapid order, chapter 5. We call those today the Ten Commandments, the Ten Commandments. And then the rest of the book of Deuteronomy is an unpacking of the meaning of those Ten Commandments in order. Well, that's true of all land. And God says if you aren't bent on observing those ten principles, and by the way, all of the law of God, all throughout the Bible, can be categorized under those ten headings. If not under two or three, there's overlap. But all of the Bible, and Jesus Christ said that. He said all of the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments, love God and love your neighbor. That's the two tables of the law. The first five commandments are about your relationship vertically with the Creator. The second five commandments are about your relationships plural, horizontally, with your fellow man. Do not covet, lie, steal, commit adultery, or murder. But those are the ten conditions of land tenancy. Just like when somebody rents an apartment or a piece of property and the landlord says, okay, you can't have pets in here and you can't have parties and I don't want you diverting the water over here in this ditch to go down here. If you do, you violated the conditions. I don't want you smoking in the motel room. There's another one. If you do, you've violated the conditions of tenancy and you can't stay here anymore. I'm going to get rid of you. That's what God says to us. He says, if you violate the conditions of land tenancy, you have defiled my land. And I want you off, and I'll get you off. And he says the way he does it is, he puts it in a very figurative, colorful set of words. He says the land will puke you out, vomit you up and off. It'll get rid of you. And that spells the story of the race of Adam. And that's what happened to Adam. He had a parcel of real estate called the Garden of Eden. The allodial landlord put him on it, told him what to do, gave him the conditions of tenancy. Real easy. Just a couple of commands. Well, he didn't keep them. So what happened? He ejected him from the land and he wouldn't let him back on that parcel of real estate. God gave a parcel of real estate to Israel, and then he ejected them from it, took them off because they broke the conditions of land tenancy. They didn't observe the fourth of the Ten Commandments. Specifically, he says that. The fourth one is to remember the Sabbath. Well, that means to allow the land to lie fallow every 7 years. That's the Sabbath of God. Let the land rest every 7 years. For 490 years, they didn't do that. 490 years, says so right in the Bible.
And 490 years, if you let the land rest every seventh year, that'd be letting it rest 70 years. And God said, I'm taking you off of the land for 70 years. I'm going to let the land observe the Sabbath of rest that you refused because you wouldn't do what the landlord told you, observe the tenancy of the land. That's just one example. All of those Ten Commandments, to violate them is to defile the land. And the land will vomit you out. That's why we call it, at common law, it's called the law of the land, the way we do things. And do we really believe? Are we dumb enough to think? Are we blind or hard-headed enough to believe that God does not enforce his law? I've concluded that he does. And I think I've seen it in my lifetime a lot. And I think I'll continue to see it. The consequences are inevitable at every case. You're not going to avoid them. I'm not going to avoid them. But allodial title, we talk about allodial title. People say, I want allodial title. Let's get to the bottom of this. Who really has allodial title? God. And it's no small matter. He's the only one that don't owe nobody nothing. We owe stewardship to him. But what we want to get to a point is, we want to get to a point where we owe it to him and don't owe it to other men. And I understand that. We want to achieve what God wants us to achieve. But I have the idea, the sneaking suspicion, that if we observe the conditions of land tenancy that the true landlord, the supreme landlord, has for us, that he will deliver us out of this bondage that we have. The prototype story of it, it's in the Bible. It's the Israelites in Egypt. And, of course, the Israelites in Egypt and the Egyptians themselves. Because of what Joseph did, they were all enslaved, and they all lost their rights in land. They sold their land back to the government. Along with their bodies, they became serfs, chained to the land. And they sold it back, and they sold it back because the government had taken all their money, and they couldn't buy any more food, the food that they had raised. They gave it to the government in taxes, and the government sold it back to them. That's how governments do. Once you give something to the government, the law of government says you don't own it anymore. You're not getting it back without a price. And that's true of your tax dollars, too, by the way. But I do have a conviction. Men have tried everything else. They've been screaming and hollering. Here in America, we haven't been for a long time. What's the answer? Well, the answer is to do what God tells you to do. I believe that's the answer. Men, by the way, men. If the women do what God tells them to do, that's not enough to change things. The Bible says the men must do it. If my people hear my voice, I mentioned this last week, my people always refers to what we would call today the militia of the 12 tribes of Israel. The men, not the women. It is the men that are the key, and if they won't take the lead and do what has to be done, it will never make a difference what the women do. It may be good for them, but it won't change the condition of the land. So when we talk about allodial land title, we need to start not be what we call anthropocentric about it. Just think of ourselves and think of men. We need to be theocentric. We need to think of God. That's the answer to the problem, and that's the only thing that will change anything. The only remedy to lawlessness is true law, not some fake law, and not focusing on ourselves, but focusing on the God that made us. And then we have the freedom. If we do that, he'll give us. He is the giver of freedom. He is the author and the only author of liberty. There is no other. Him and no other, him and no more. Well, if you're there, Gerard, I know it wasn't Gerard. Some other kind soul that they were. Yeah, thanks. I hope I came across.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Brent. That may come up Saturday.
Okay, good. Hope it does.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, it's far past our midnight bewitching hour, so I'm going to shut down the panel. I'm going to turn off the recording.